Hello and welcome to a very special episode 145 of the Awesome Comics Podcast.
Yeah.
Coming to you live
I
and
can't look at him when you talk.
No, I know. No. What's that you hear? Yes, we're all in the same room at the same time. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of Murder Road, and I'm joined by Dan Butcher, creator of
Viper. Hello.
And Tony Esmond, creator of Cockney Kung Fu and God knows how many, I don't know, what is it?
Loose
babies.
Stories.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello. Yes.
This is weird.
This is weird. This is the Virgin Mary and the little baby Jesus. Yeah. Really.
No,
that's
we're not,
why I'm doing the talking.
We are not having an epiphany. We are coming. This whole show is coming live and direct from the shop floor of Leamington Comic Con 2018. We have just set up our table.
Yeah, we're ready to rock and roll.
It looks good. We got the comic. We got lots of cool stuff. We got the Cockney Kung Fu print.
Oh, the new print.
The new print. And we're thoroughly looking forward to the day. And
we've got a good crowd around us. We're next to Nicholas Prolix.
Yeah.
Susie Gander.
Yep.
Jason Gunn.
Yeah.
It's very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, we've got a lot of good creators around
it's
us.
The cream Penman.
Penman, James Lawrence, Rachel Smith. They're opposite
corner,
us.
Isn't it?
Yeah,
cool
so
corner.
Basically, like, our cool, half of the corner. Convention is, like, it's party central, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the house of God.
Yeah. I think I've done us.
Yeah.
Accident.
Yeah. Have we said that this is happening in a church?
Home. Yeah.
Yeah. This convention is my first ever convention in a church.
Never.
No, I think is Elcaf a church? It looks like one.
It's a church for you.
Yeah, it's a church of love.
Considering a lot of our materials, well, it's not blasphemous, but it's quite kind of quite incendiary.
I know. This we may actually spontaneously combust. By
somebody
the end of
the sent day. Me loads of pictures of the kid in The Omen this week.
Nice.
How was your childhood?
I saw the vicar walking around early.
Was there?
Yeah. So
I'm going to ride him like a cowboy.
What? If I flip, don't look through that.
What, the vicar?
Yeah, the vicar was knocking out.
Do you reckon we can sell him an issue of
Awesome
Comics?
Get an interview with him. Let's get an interview with the vicar. That would be good.
What comics do you like?
None.
If we can get the
Bible.
There
is a Bible comic, isn't there? Because we spoke to that weird bloke at a convention that time. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Bible Man.
Bible Man?
Yeah.
What's his power?
On YouTube.
I mean, resurrect himself.
To quote Brain Dead, he kicks ass in the name of the Lord.
To be fair, aren't all comics basically Jesus?
Yeah. In some, well,
like
not necessarily.
Man's kind of Jesus. Yeah. Isn't
religious
miracle
allegories,
man's
isn't
kind of genius, Jesus, isn't he? You know,
even RoboCop
that way as well. Yeah, I'm RoboCop.
Yeah. Dan's favourite thing ever in the world.
Yeah, he's kind of Jesus, isn't he?
Yeah, Jesus like
robot Jesus.
Yeah,
the best kind of Jesus.
Have we gone on too long now?
I love the fact that we're 5 minutes into this intro, and because we're in a church, we said Jesus probably more than we have in 144 episodes. So it's going to be an interesting show. There's going to be lots of interview clips. Hopefully, we're going to try and get the panel that we're doing later. Go try and get the audio.
I don't know if I'll get the Wagner panel, will I? Because you'll need the mic at the table, won't you?
No, you take the mic and then we can.
You reckon?
Yeah.
You'd use your phone or something, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Look at us organising this on air. That's
on
brilliant.
Air. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
This is this is how much organisation we do, though.
Yeah.
We texted each other stupid messages last night. That was about it, I think, wasn't it? Yeah.
Because of the convention, though, there won't be a WhatsApp message that'll put me off every 5 minutes during the day. So, yeah, enjoy this show. It's a bit rough already. We haven't done anything like this before.
No.
So there may be some audio clips that don't make any sense.
Are we doing the whole episode?
Yes.
I like Dan does that wide-eyed nod.
Yeah.
It.
That's what's coming.
We're doing the whole thing throughout the day, which is why we really need to try and get that panel to pad it out.
I just imagine the lady in 1980s LA comes up to Dan and goes, "Do you want to come back to my place?" And he does that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've done that look quite a few times.
That's
haven't
the
you,
Gold's
Dan?
Gym look.
Yeah.
The Gold's Gym. my tan leather weight belt. You want to come back to my place?
Yeah.
He's doing a look that totally doesn't work on a podcast.
And then he just goes, "Bring some friends."
It's a two-man job.
Oh, dear. You don't know this, folks, but we're currently like stood in a corner
in
of a church.
Of baby Jesus.
And everyone's...
There's an angel above you.
Occasionally, we're getting funny looks.
Yeah.
That's what happens when we go to a convention.
We usually get funny looks anyway, but it's magnified now we're standing in the corner of a church.
Yeah. And if you hear this, why not pop down?
Yeah.
That's what that means.
Yeah. Well, it's not live. Just because we're recording it on
yeah,
the day.
Come down to church.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Be saved.
Yeah.
Yeah, be saved.
Praise Jesus for the 99p breakfast.
right.
Breakfast? Other breakfasts are available.
Have you had breakfast?
I had a tracker bar. Look, it was an early start. We've all had an early start. We are full of life at the moment, aren't we, lads?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had too much coffee.
Thanks for coffee.
To be fair.
This may be a really extra hilarious episode as our batteries run down throughout the day. So who knows what it's going to be like.
About being tired later.
Oh, yeah we will. Got we will.
That to look forward to, listeners.
Yeah. Oh, and So enjoy the rest of the clips you're about to hear. And as always, go to comichouse.com. Because they're our sponsor, but...
I'm so tempted just to cup you, just to wind you up right now.
Front or back? Anyway. Right.
They've got a load of Marcosia titles recently added. There's a ton of new stuff on there, so check out comichouse.com.
Oh, my God. Where's Dan gone?
I don't know.
This is the new Dan. Sales machine.
Maybe he's been resurrected. Oh, my God.
Okay. So it's Dan here with the comic creator, Jason Copley. Hi, Jason. You all right? I've just literally picked up a copy of Adventures of Captain Winston Bulldog. Looks fantastic.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about it.
Definitely. Winston Bulldog is an airship captain in an alternative universe where you've got intelligent animals and intelligent vegetables. The bad guys are the evil veggie nation who want to take over the world. And he leads an airship fighting for the freedom of Blighty. And amongst his crew is another character called Samurai Commander Keiko Panda, who's on assignment from Japan.
Nice. So this, tell me, this began for a number of years.
Yeah, it started in 93.
Wow.
So, yeah, absolutely. This is back when, you know, we would self-publish comics just by photocopying and bending the staples ourselves with the thumbs. That's right. And it ran until about 2006, when we then published a long-form version of it, which was published in the Mammoth Book of Best New Manga.
Oh, okay.
And then the artist who did that, Neil Cameron... he went on to do lots of other things. He now does work for the Phoenix and stuff like that. That's where we are. And today at Leamington, got a brand new collection of Bulldog Adventures called Bulldog and Panda 2018.
Nice one. That's great. One of the best things I've said about Small Press is you think you've kind of seen everything and you've seen a lot of the titles. And then something like this comes on, it's absolutely fantastic.
Great stuff. Thank you.
I wish you well throughout the day.
Great. Thank you very much.
I'm here with Richard Carrington from, Hardline Comics? Oh, how'd you come across that name?
The short answer is it sort of takes a hard line against dog shit comics, really. It's sort of, I don't know, it just sounded good. It sounded a little bit pornographic when I first thought of it, I guess. But
which is never a bad thing.
Never a bad thing, but my comics are clean.
So you've got a comic out called The Guys, but you're also releasing a novel. Is it today you've released it? Is it?
Yeah, it's come out today. I've got three copies left, so that's been selling quite well. But comics is still my passion, and the novel was written quite a while ago, actually, but I've just updated it and released it today, and I think comic readers would enjoy the book as well. It's called Of Hearts and Hitmen. It's about a hitman who's married, but his wife doesn't know he's a hitman, and... Long story short, a contract goes out on her life, so it's all about she sort of wants to leave him, but she can't because he's saving her life, kind of thing. So it's about the marriage going bad. You know, he's been lying to her all throughout their marriage, and it's about the sort of the relationship that they've got together, obviously going bad because he's lied to her and he's a hitman. But you know, they have to go on the run together. Everyone's trying to kill her. He's trying to rescue her, and it's not a romantic novel as such. It's just about this sort of married couple, and you know, being put in the most strenuous circumstances possible. You know,
Cool. Sounds good. And where can people get that one from?
I've got a website, www.theguyscomic.com. The book's on Amazon. There's a big cartel store, but okay. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I'm no good at marketing, man. It's out there. You'll find it.
And you've also got The Guys. Yeah. So, did you want to tell us a little bit of that? How many issues you got? Is it six or seven now?
There's six. Six is coming out today as well. That's just released, and then the collected edition as well with all six put together in a nice graphic novel. The short elevator pitch for that, I guess, is it's kind of the Young Ones meets. Imagine if the Young Ones went into the set of the Adam West Batman. So it's about these guys, the guys, and they get superpowers, but they don't buy into the whole superhero thing. It's you know, these teenage lads, they don't give a shit about being superheroes, but they end up meeting bad guys like Mindo and the Shifter and the Prober, and it's quite cheeky. It's very sweary, but it's a comedy at the end of the day. So I think fans of the superhero genre would enjoy the book, because it's somewhere between a love letter to Silver Age comics and a bit of a piss take of them as well, because they're inherently ridiculous things anyway, aren't they? But I mean, I think you'll see my love for comics on every page, kind of thing. And I've also got the claws just to do the whole gamut, and that's a bit darker. That's the superhero gets killed on page 7, so it's all about what happens after, because a good guy always wins, you know. So do away with that trope, kill a hero off on page 7. What happens after the bad guys win?
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's a little everything. I think everything I do is just a little bit of a twist on things, because there's no point doing a straight superhero. I don't think there's too much competition. But if you just tweak it a little bit and
give it something, hopefully.
It's almost like a police murder mystery as opposed to a superhero story, is it?
It's not, there's no mystery. I mean, they just kill him off early doors, but it's about what would happen. It's basically, it's a non too subtle Batman ripoff.
So what would happen to Gotham if Batman died, almost?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it's called the Claws because they split what would be Gotham. It's called New Olympus, the city. They split it into 10 districts, and they've each got a claw in one of the districts. So it's sort of what happens if you got rid of Batman, what would happen, what would the villains do afterwards, you know?
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So you're doing Leamington today. Well, you got any other cons planned, or?
I haven't. I've got two young kids, really, and they put a dampener in the convention scene. I'm hoping to do Ice in September.
Okay. Yeah.
Other than that, my calendar's pretty clear.
Good man. And where can we get it again?
And where can we find you on social media?
Social media, Facebook, Hardline Comics. I don't know the name. The website is www.theguyscomic.com, and everything's on there. All the links, all the, you know, outer bite and everything like that.
Nice one. Thanks, dude.
Cheers, thanks, Sonny. Cheers.
It is.
Have I just ruined the recording?
No, you haven't ruined the recording. I mean, I could edit this bit out, but don't be intimidated when I put this in your face.
can't promise.
Okay. I've had a very pleasant surprise as we've been joined by Zach Simmons-Hearn and is it Emily?
Alice.
Both from the
Smooth.
Phoenix.
Smooth.
I get everybody's name wrong. And also, as you can hear, folks, what's that theme tune playing at the moment? That's
Jesus' theme tune.
It's Jesus, because we're in a church. Yeah, the Jesus theme tune. Yeah. So, what brings you guys here today?
It's mostly the comics, really. In fact, I was actually listening to your show the other day, and you were talking about it, and I thought, that's like about an hour from me. So I thought, I'll pop down. Yeah. So it's thanks to you guys.
That's nice. And as you know, on our last show, we talked a lot about Zach and the Phoenix guys, so... you did the proof listen of the episode, didn't you, really, Ellie?
Well, yeah. We're all listening to it in the office, making sure Tom didn't embarrass himself. Or us. and he didn't.
Yeah.
He did a fine job.
Yeah.
Don't fire me, Tom.
Well, this very week, I received my first issue of The Phoenix from my subscription.
I saw your photograph on Twitter. Yeah, it's good, man.
And the comic.
Yeah.
And, it's amazing stuff. I mean, how long have you been working with them now?
I've been working with them as a freelancer since the beginning, but just started working in-house like at the start of this year. So
what's that been like going from, like, because I guess when you're a freelancer you're working from home, and now you've almost not an office job, but now you've got like almost a what's the difference like for you?
It's just fun, really. It's just nice sort of working with like a whole load of people all making the same comic, and all, I don't know, just being able to share ideas, throw things back and forth, and just kind of, I don't know, it's just like a nice sort of creative
vibe. Is it easier having that sort of, almost the 9-to-5, I mean, you don't necessarily have those hours, but the 9-to-5 work ethic of you're going in, you're going to work for that time, and then you can go home and relax?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, because like when I was working from home, it's, you know, worked stupid hours, horrible hours, because my bed was just in the next room, so I could work till 3 and then sort of roll out.
And the distractions are always there, I guess, as well, aren't you?
Yeah, you can't procrastinate too much when the editor sat right behind you. So. But it means that I get stuff done, like, usually within reasonable hours, which is better. So, definitely, I love it. Yeah. It's great. It's
nice. And we got a bit of a hint of, like, what you've got coming up.
Chaplin, a fantasy epic comic.
Yeah, Legacy. Yeah, yeah. So been working on that for, yeah, like the last couple of months, really. And yeah, it seems to be going really well so far. I'm really excited about it.
So when can we look forward to seeing more of that in the future?
I think it's either June or July. Not entirely sure. But yeah, I think June or July is when it's looking at coming out. I'm about 6 episodes deep in it at the moment. So yeah, fair way along. Got a bit of breathing space right now.
The breathing space in comics rarely lasts a long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's more than I've had on previous things, though, so it's good. It's all going all right. I think it'll be fine. I think we're on track.
So what you look, as you can tell, folks, I'm standing right next to a tannoy. So hopefully you can hear what we're talking about. Hang on. Let's let them play this out. I feel like there should be like a bit of intermission music.
Yeah.
This is
great.
Yeah,
it's a good podcast.
Yeah, it's great stuff. It's great
audio.
Listeners
are going to love this stuff, man.
Yeah, yeah. I love your jacket.
Thank you, mate. Cheers.
That's amazing. I almost said, I love what you've done with your hair. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's a very expensive do, actually. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. And we're back in the room.
Lovely.
So, yeah, lots to look forward to from you then. But yeah. you've come here. I mean, how often do you get a chance to go to, like, conventions?
I usually get out to, like, a couple a year. Not that many. This year I'm going to be a few. But mostly just visiting and stuff.
Because that's how I've met you before at shows.
Like, yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I used to have, like, a table every year at most of the shows. But I've kind of just lately... I don't know why, really. I'm not bothered the last couple of years. But I think I've not had new comics out, so I've just kind of...
Your productivity has just increased, hasn't it, I guess? You know, it's that conventions versus create, you know...
Yeah, yeah, that's it. I've kind of had to prioritise sort of the paid work over, yeah, my sort of self-published stuff, which is a shame, because I really want to get back onto Monstrosity Issue 4 or something. I'm really hoping I can sort of get on with finishing, like, the next one.
Oh, yeah, we love it.
Fingers crossed. I definitely aim to try and get that done for later this year, but I don't know. Fingers crossed. Anyway.
But what are you looking forward to sort of picking up today? You know, is there anything you have in mind, or are you just completely...
I'm looking forward to picking up the first issue of the Awesome Comics Anthology, of course.
I didn't pay him to say that.
You're not paying me to say that. I take it back. I retract that.
Oh, brilliant. That's good. It's good to have a sale. Yeah, I should pay you to do our ads.
Yeah.
Well, that's brilliant. I mean, what more can you say?
I'll sneak you into the Phoenix, man. Like, just draw draw an advert into the background.
Do you know what? You're lucky Dan and Tony haven't heard that, because they take you up on that. But anyway, hope you have a lovely day.
Thanks, man. You too.
I think, are you going to come along to our panel?
Yes.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry.
I'm here with Coglife Comics. When was it I last saw you? Was it Thought Bubble?
Yeah.
That was your first con, and this is now your second con. Is that right?
Yeah, racking them up now.
Yeah, look at you. You're not amateurs no more. How's it going?
It's going really well. We've already beat our sales from last time, so we're up into 3 comics now. Yeah. So, but it's still amazing that anyone anywhere even cares. So that's just selling ones, like a feat, and just someone reading.
Yeah.
It's like a good
that's
thing.
Nice, isn't it? Yeah. So what you've got? What have you got coming out? So.
So we've got a Celebration of Life anthology coming out this year. We kickstarted it a while back, and it's finally coming to fruition. And we've got our second anthology at the end of the year. We're planning on debuting a Thorwall as well. Yeah, so we're trying to get 2 books out at least this year, and then we're splitting off to do our own projects as well under the Comic Life banner.
What sort of projects you got on the go?
So I'm doing a werewolf story called The Night Shift. So that's my plan that I'm planning on doing at least 8 or 10 issues out of that, and then these guys are doing their own individual projects as well.
Well, I'm obviously going to do a few pieces for Mike on his werewolf anthology. I want to sort of as I've improved on my art from last year, sort of I'm going to be doing a lot of submissions overall.
Okay.
For artwork in general, to sort of build up on my repertoire.
Are you looking to get on anthologies and stuff like that, or you'd start with? Or?
Yeah, all the other anthologies, things like that. Obviously, all that's going to sort of come back into the anthologies that we produce yearly, as well as sort of got a few ideas in the back burner of my own for stories and things like that.
Good. Yeah, and you do?
Yeah, so the same as Deck, really. Just working on my artwork. Looking more at sci-fi or fantasy. Either those kind of wheelhouses. Right, okay. So, like, need to get good at drawing robots first, I think, so instead of people. So, yeah. Looking at that, really, yeah.
Good. good. And you're all from Australia? Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, just over the water from Australia.
And where can people find you online, dude?
You can find us at coglifecomics.co.uk. It's the same with Facebook if you just play in comics.
@cog_life.
And have you got a big cartel, or where can people buy your comic?
And we've got a web store on the website, yeah, and you just go through all Facebook and it. I'm stalking most people on Twitter, so if they look in their followers and stuff, I'll be knocking about somewhere.
Yeah, I recommend Holly Hagen from Geordie Shore if you want any. Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
And now for something completely different.
Does anyone need me to introduce who I'm sitting with? Hands up. No? Okay. Oh, I suppose I should for the radio, shouldn't I? So, from Dread Strontium Dog, Star Wars, Aliens, Robo Hunter, and finally now Rock of the Reds. He's gone under a number of names. I've gone through your pseudonyms, John. I hope you don't mind. So we've got John Howard. Is that one? T.D.
Yes.
Grover.
That's right. Yeah.
Matt Strott.
Mike Stott.
Mike Stott, is it? Okay.
I think so. Yeah. I don't remember them all.
My favourite. One of my favourites. Keith. K-E-E-F.
Yeah,
a bit of a low
Keith,
Rolling Stones.
Keith Ripley, yeah.
Yeah. And Brian Scutter.
Scooter.
Scooter. Yeah. Right, there Scooter. You go. Good. Excellent. But we all know him as John
That's
Wagner.
That's a few of them.
Yeah.
Good. The funny thing is, the back in the days when I actually used to win awards, they reinstated the Eagle Awards. And I won first, second, and third under different names.
Brilliant, that's great. So, I know we're going to move on to Rock of the Reds. I've reread it again this week. Brilliant, loved it, absolutely loved it. But just going to start with just a couple of general questions, if you don't mind, John. What drives you as a writer to keep writing? It's not, I mean, you've done a few jobs in your time, haven't you? You worked on a dredger and you managed a stately home, I think you've talked about prior to that. But what drives you to keep writing as a job?
Because it's easy. Well, when you've worked on a dredging barge, you find writing quite easy. You know, I went up to Cromarty to try and give it all up, and I was caretaker of a mansion up there, and but they didn't pay any money, so I had to take a job as well. So I took a job on a dredging barge, and I also worked for George Wimpey building houses and doing a lot of things. And in the end, I thought, the hell with it, I'll just write. It's a lot easier. I can earn this in a couple of days that I have to turn up at Wimpy's every day for. Yeah. So
wasn't there a story with the stately home? Didn't it get burgled while you were looking at
it? Yeah, well, that's what ended my tenure there. Well, everybody in the village knew I was out on the dredging barge overnight.
Right, okay.
So, of course, they just cleared the lead off the roof.
And then didn't Alan Grant come and manage that stately home? So, oh, no, we're slightly off
he
subject
was there
here,
first, right. And I took over from him when he left.
So, I mean, you could do another job. You could do what is it gets you up in the morning, gets you writing?
Well, if it's a good story, I really enjoy it. Like Rock, you know, I positively can't wait to get to the office to get working on it.
Right.
And some things, you know, you have to drag me with a team of horses to do it. But when it's a good story, I just love doing it.
Brilliant. So there is a room. I mean, there is a rumor going around that you used to. There's something. I think it came up on the 2000 AD documentary that the rumor is that sometimes you used to use CFAX to inspire you to write a story. I think Andy Diggle says it.
No, it's more like reading newspapers.
Right, okay.
Alan and I, when Alan and I worked together and we were doing Dread, we would often sit down with a copy of The Guardian or whatever newspaper we had and go through it and check each story and say, well, how would that apply to the 22nd century? How could you use that? How could you satirise it in the 22nd? And the number of ideas we got just from reading the news, from current events.
Do you think, I think that tells for 2008, especially in the 80s, because you've got the Cold War metaphors and you've got fatties and all this sort of thing, haven't you? The rise of different things that we're now seeing.
Yeah.
I've heard you say that you're not overly influenced or by comics, it's more prose, is that right?
Yeah, but thinking about it recently, I think my biggest influence is probably the comics I read as a kid.
Okay, because you were brought up in America for part of that time.
Yeah, but I didn't read comics and okay. I couldn't afford them.
Right, okay.
it was only when I moved over to this country at 12 and I got a paper around and I would read all the comics in the newsagents before I went out, and as I walked along I'd be reading people's comics and stuffing these wrinkled things through their door when I was finished. But it really...
Now comics fans would be up in arms over that, wouldn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, they would.
What sort of comics was that?
Well, they'd be mainly the DC Thompson titles, the Victor, the Hornet, Hotspur, that sort of thing. I was very fond of... I thought DC Thompsons were by far the best.
Superb comics.
And also some of the funnies, you know, I quite liked them too. And when I quit my paper around, my sister started getting girls' comics and started reading them, and they were even better. You know, I really liked the girls' comics because the stories were really well put. I mean, the boys were pretty good, but the girls' comics, the stories had to be good. So,
did you remember any of the writers from back then who you were reading? Did you meet any of them?
Well, in fact, we stole some of them. when I left DC Thompson's and eventually went down to IPC, we got the names of quite a few DC Thompson contributors.
Right.
Mainly on the boys' side, it would be people like Alan Hebden's dad, yes. Eric Hebden, and I can't even remember their names now, but there were some good writers. But the thing about DC Thompson's was, they, compared to IPC, would have like two editorial staff. DC Thompson's would have six. So they got in a lot of really raw material, you know, stuff that really needed worked on, and they worked on it, and, you know, so that they made writers appear better than they were.
Okay.
It was such a good training ground because, you know, when you got a bad story and you had to rewrite it, and it taught you, you know, what was good in the story, what to cut, what to accentuate. So it was.
So the job of a good editor essentially is to help format the story.
That's right, and some of the material, I mean, you could never have appeared in a comic unless it had been heavily worked on.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Must have got that growing up in comics, have you, or coming through?
Well, it's something that I applied as I moved on in comics, like when Pat and I were doing Battle, and all that training that we'd had came in really useful.
Yeah, and then the magazine, did you apply that when you... Because you edited the magazine, did you?
I sort of originated it. And, but I mean, these lessons are... They're part of you once you...
Okay. How do you find editorship now? Both in 2008...
I would never do it again.
You wouldn't? No, too much hard work? Or
You could spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and still not turn out a product that you were entirely happy with.
Right, okay.
Now, I didn't feel that they paid editors enough. I mean, you could have worked solidly on it, and, you know, there's always something you can do. So in the end, I thought, well, better just to concentrate on my own work.
You know,
and feel happier doing that and not worrying about... Oh, here's this shit script. What am I going to do with it? And all that. And, this artist, I got to get rid of him. He's so terrible.
This artist,
he's really good. I need him, but he wants more money. You know, all the kind of cares an editor has, and I don't need them. It's much easier being a freelance.
Yeah.
Plus, if you don't feel like working, you don't. You know, as long as you've got a bit of money in the bank, you know, you just don't have to turn up.
Do you find the working day is it? Because you mentioned a minute ago that you go somewhere to write. Is that how you work here?
No, I have an office
at home, sort of thing.
Home. Yeah, I used to work 7 days a week, in long hours. These days, if I work 2 days a week, it's a lot.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, but I've got a small holding, so I need to run that as well.
Have you? Okay. Yeah. No, interesting. Cool. So you've come through all the weekly comics in 2008, and you've worked for DC. And we found ourselves now with Rock of the Reds. How did that come about?
Well, about, I don't know how long ago it was, 20, 25 years ago.
Really? Okay.
Alan and I were working on a new anthology comic that was going to rival 2008. You know, they're always going to rival 2000 AD. And so we worked out a number of stories, and one of them was a football story. And... you know, what could we do that was new in football? An alien footballer. And once we had that idea, I mean, we'd been working on another, we'd done work on another story called Doomlord that was had a lot of similarities to it, and we knew it would work.
Okay.
So we wrote the first script, and then we decided that if we went ahead with the anthology comic, we'd both end up bankrupt. So we stuck this script away in a drawer, and about 3 years ago, I was looking for something new to do, and I went through the drawer, and I pulled out, first I pulled out our pornographic story.
Brilliant, I look forward to seeing that one.
it was called Randy Truckers in Space.
That's copyrighted.
And anyway, I pulled it out, and I thought, oh, this is really funny. Look on it as Carry On Shagging. Yep. In Space. And I thought, this is really funny. I'll work this up into a full script. And so I presented it to Shah Nazir at BHP.
Okay.
And although I think he had quite a few reservations, they agreed to publish it.
Oh, okay.
But the first choice of artist was Carlos Esquera, who had a look at it and then refused to do it.
Did he say why, or...?
I don't want to do that. And my next choice was Ian Gibson, who had done a lovely, lovely pornographic story, but Ian shied away too. And I thought, I'm just never going to get this.
You never
thing
know, there's
done.
A few artists here. I think, might be worth having.
Well, my partner didn't want me doing it.
Right, okay, right, fair enough. Okay.
So I went back to the drawer and I pulled out Rom of the Rovers, which was our original. You know, spoof title for Rock of the Reds, and I read it and I thought, oh, okay, this one will go. So I wrote that up into, because I'd promised BHP a script, and okay. I wasn't giving them the porn script anymore, so I wrote it up into a full book and sent it, and they loved it. And
so
here
for those that don't know, BHP is it Blackhearted Press?
Yes,
they're a Scottish small press, indie publisher.
That's right, yeah.
Really interesting stuff.
Yeah, they do a wide cross-section of stuff. It's very interesting.
Yeah. So did you want to give a little summary of the story of Rock of the Reds, just to sort of whet everyone's appetite? Because it is for sale at your table.
It's
very good.
An alien being pursued by assassins lands on Earth. And takes the identity of the first person he meets, which happens to be bad boy footballer Kyle Dixon. And so he's a shape changer, so he changes into Kyle's shape, and he miniaturizes Kyle and sticks him away in the fridge. And then he takes his place, and he gradually learns a love for football. I don't want to go too much further into the story, but Kyle was a brilliant footballer who was wasting it because of his character, but Rock is a different kettle of fish, and so he fulfills Kyle's footballing potential.
Yeah.
So much so that Real Madrid are after him. So,
are you a fan of football? Are you a football fan? I wondered that was on reading.
Yeah, I have... I started watching football roughly at the same time I started reading comics.
Okay. What's your team?
Well, in Scotland it was Morton.
Okay, right.
And here it's Manchester United.
Oh dear, okay.
Well, they're close. they're close enough. And when we decided to go and watch football, there were Wolves and Liverpool, Everton, and the two Manchester clubs were kind of within our
driving
range.
Distance, yeah.
And, well... They had Beckham, they had Scholes, they had Keane.
Yeah.
You know, who are you going to choose?
Millwall are available for comics. So, I mean, this takes us back a little bit to you finding stories in the newspaper and using them, because I suspect there was some bad boy footballers out there.
There are a few. Well, there was a particular one, Ravel Morrison, who played for Manchester United, who everybody... He was going to be the next big thing, but he's bounce from club to club. Nobody wants them because they won't behave.
Yeah, which you get completely from this, don't you? Mm. Yeah. I mean, to me, it shows an affection for football, and you can see that. And one of my favourite parts of it is I'm not a huge football fan, but the tension you feel as the matches are going on, is that something you would play? Mm. I mean, Roy the Rovers, I know, which is a similar play on words, isn't it? But Roy the Rovers always played on the last-minute goal and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you play on that. Was that something you and Alan wanted to do?
Oh, no, just natural drama, really.
Yeah,
It's just, I mean, you don't... A story has to surprise you. It's got to thrill you. It's got to keep you in a state of tension to be enjoyable.
Completely, yeah. Mm. Yeah, it really does. Yeah. But you also play on that sort of dark humour of 2000 AD, so we combine the both.
Yeah.
Was that something you'd planned from the beginning?
I can't write a story without humour.
I've heard you say that before. That is what I was really interested
the
in.
The nearest
that.
Thing I came to it was Button Man.
Right, okay.
The first Button Man had very little humour in it, but... as I'm writing, if I see the humour in a situation, I can't avoid doing something with it. You know, I like a laugh, and I know most comic readers do too.
And I think that sets the standard for 2000 AD. There's very, very little in 2000 AD, even now, that hasn't got a little smirk, a little wink, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So how did you find Dan Cornwall? He's quite a find, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been great. Well, I started off, once again, my go-to guy was Carlos. I said, you want... not draw football. So I asked Carlos, and then I thought, well, I actually asked Mike Perkins as well, who I like a lot, and I thought he would have done a very different sort of football story.
Yeah.
In fact, Mike Perkins has a rock illustration
in the trade.
In the trade,
oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So we did a little gallery with a few people, and asked Mike. He's done one. So I thought, well, I can't really get an artist who needs to pay for his life with his work. So I went to Zarjazz and Dog Breath, the two 2000 AD fanzines, and looked through them.
Who are real spawning grounds for creative
talent.
Oh, they are,
Dave Evans really nurtures a lot of talent.
Nice guy, really nice guy. Yeah.
And I spotted two artists that I really like. One was called George Coleman. I met him up at a con in Edinburgh, and probably I shouldn't have said to him that I'd almost asked him to draw Rock of the Reds. but Dan just won out, and he's been a real revelation. He did, up until recently, drive a bus in Brighton. And
he's finally given up. I know, I follow him on Facebook. And stuff.
Did you see that one on Facebook that Jim Campbell did with Rock hanging out at the bus? It was lovely.
Well, so he's actually given up, and he's now working in 2008 as well as working on Rock.
Yeah, he's doing some dreads, he's working for a card company, and he's doing the new series of Rock.
Brilliant. Excellent. Yeah. We'll get onto that in a second.
He's a really excellent artist, and he's never going to be short of work, I should think.
Yeah, completely agree. Absolute revelation, really nice stuff. I remember it coming in, I write for Down the Tubes with John Freeman, and I remember initially it came in as Rom of the Reds.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was one step from Rom of the Rovers. So we thought,
changed gradually. We realised that, there was an announcement that Mattel had got the rights to Rom Space Knight, and we thought, we are not going into court against Mattel. So it became Rock. Rock's a much better name.
Yeah,
it's a good hard name. You
know? Yeah. So,
plus, it's good for puns.
Yes, isn't it? And the character design, was that completely down to Dan, or did you? Because I know, without spoiling anything, there's a very distinctive lump on the character's head, isn't there?
I think I sent him an illustration of Hellboy.
Oh, okay.
And I said, you know, something like this, but it's all Dan, really.
So, okay.
And it's funny, if you look at the beginning of the story, Rock's horns are a wee bit more flaccid, but as Dan gets more confidence, these horns stand right up, you know, bigger and bolder.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, compare Rock in the early part to Rock at the end, and it's a much more much more forceful, thrusting rock.
Right.
So rock tumescent.
The Diplont under panel. Hey, ladies and gentlemen. I have to say, without spoiling anything for it, has anyone not read Rock of the Reds in the room? Oh, okay, I won't spoil it, but there is one moment where my two favourite villains in comics for years turn up, who are like biker aliens. They were cracking. Was that your idea, or?
Well, I mean, I put them on the bikes,
right? Okay,
but Dan
right.
drew them. I said yeah. they look like rock, but not quite like rock.
Right. Know? Okay.
And they're not so good at the transformation, so when they do it, it will be a bit sort of amorphous and mutant looking.
Yeah. I get you. Yeah. Okay. That's a real highlight. I love that moment. There. Do you enjoy writing rock more than, say, Dread or Johnny Alpha or something like that? Is there something... Because it seems less cynical in a way to me. I don't know.
I do, yeah. There was a time when I loved writing Johnny Alpha and Dread just as much, but... Or maybe nearly as much, but
yeah.
Rock is a real pleasure.
Yeah.
I just like the character. He's got a lot of charm.
Yeah. Do you think that's... There's a different motivation to write maybe rock than the sort of hard-edged Dread, for example. The hard-edged Dread story. At one point, Dread was almost a different idea, a different story every week, but you've got the benefit of the 20-page comic now.
Well, that changes things anyway. I mean, it's a different sort of pacing to it and many other changes. I probably write it for a more wide-ranging age group. I really want kids to pick up rock.
Yeah.
And I want adults to be able to appreciate it on roughly the same level.
I think it isn't cynical. Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, it's less, isn't it? Yeah. There's still that little wink.
Oh, yeah.
The cop's great in it as well. I love the cop. Yeah, really good. There's five more minutes and I'm going to open up to the audience if anyone's got any questions. I'm sure there will be. Just a couple that I'd just like to talk about is... there's going to be a rock sequel?
I'm working on it now, yeah. It's called Rock the God.
All right, okay.
So Rock becomes a god. Which interferes a wee bit with his football.
So like Jesus Christ played for Melchester Rovers or something.
He's not that kind of god.
Right, okay.
He's more a Thor kind of god.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And when's that due? Do you know when that's...
Oh, it'll be... I reckon you won't see a book until next... January at least.
Right, okay.
Because Dan's just starting on it now.
And you're going to release it as monthlies?
We'll do it monthlies. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I noticed you're also on Comic House as well, aren't you? You've gone on to a couple of digital apps.
I believe so. I don't pay much attention. Shah handles all that.
Right, okay, cool. And you enjoying working with BHP?
Yeah, they're good. Good bunch.
Yeah, cool. Nice one. I know this will probably come up, but just a couple of questions for those in the audience. How's the Dread series going? Do we know? The TV series?
I have no idea.
No idea around that one?
No, I'm not kept informed.
Okay. And the other one I noticed is Bunman got optioned a couple of years ago for a movie, didn't it?
It's been optioned off and on for the past nearly 30 years now.
Right, okay.
25 years anyway. It was optioned by Lakeshore, then some other bunch, I can't remember who they were, you know, big companies.
Yeah.
And now it's with Warners and J.J. Abrams.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
It's been with them for 5 years, and we're getting pretty fed up with it all. So.
Is that? Do you just kind of accept that that's how it is now, is it?
Well, I would really like to see someone getting it made. I think my mistake probably was not to give the rights to Alex Garland, who did the...
Yeah.
The Dread film, because he was very keen to do it.
I know you're a fan of the film as well, are you?
Yeah, I like the second Dread film.
Yeah, I think we all would, I think. Yeah, definitely. Cool, and at the moment you've got Strontium Dog running in the prog as well.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, enjoying that again?
Not as much as Rock.
Right, okay.
But it's nice to have Johnny back. And,
yeah. Wolf's Son back,
yeah,
spoilers.
Wolf's Son,
Yeah, nice, really gorgeous design of Wolf's Son as well.
Yeah.
You can tell, but it's not the same.
That's right, I just gave him to Carlos and said, do something. It's great to work with really good artists because you don't have to do so much thinking yourself.
Yeah, brilliant. Mm. And what else have you got? Is there anything else you've got coming out at the moment?
I'm working on a new story that will be appearing in the magazine once again with Carlos. using a character he designed probably about 30 years ago, but I could never get a decent story out of it. We called him Sam Seven originally. He was going to be a detective. But there was something too clean-cut about the character, and I don't do clean-cut characters very well. Decided we were going to do something new, and I couldn't get this character out of my mind. So I spent probably 2 months just thinking about trying to get something that I wanted to write. You know, you could come up with a story, but unless you actually want to write it, you're coming up with crap. So I finally got a story. It's called Spectre. And, I won't say too much about it because I don't want to give away the plot.
Mega City based or?
No.
No? Okay. Right, I get you.
Future based, but right. Not Mega City.
Brilliant. Excellent. Okay. Okay. Any questions from the audience? Anyone got any questions? Yeah, Kev?
Yep.
I don't know you, Kev. Ask a question.
So I recently did my first comic, really short, 6 pages, because I wanted to draw a comic. And what I realised, probably a bit later than I should, was that I actually needed to write a script for it as well. And I just wondered if you had any, and it was a tough process, to be honest. I found it really quite difficult. I just wondered if you had any advice for people who are just sort of starting out on script writing, you know, to improve what they do.
Gosh, that's a big one. I usually, 3 bits of advice I give to people, generally, are write. You know, if you want to be a writer, write. You got to keep writing. Don't get stuck on one thing. Write it, improve it. And when you feel that you're in a hole, put it aside. Go on to something else. The more you do, the better you get. And that's very true of artists as well. Well, it's just like I was saying with Dan. He started off with this slightly limp rock and ended up with this thrusting young rock, you know, and you could see the improvement and the confidence grow as he went through. And so you got write or draw, but keep doing it. The second thing is a lesson I learned at DC Thompson's, which is there's nothing you do that you can't do better. So you've got to be really self-critical. When you've done something, look at it. Look at every aspect of it and ask yourself, how could I make that better? How could I make that character more distinctive? Or, you know, how could I improve that dialogue? You know, and just look at every aspect of what you've done and keep improving. And there's nothing I've ever written that I couldn't make better if I had the time to go back to it. So, and most of the stories that I write, by the time I've finished them, I've been over sections of it maybe 30 times. You know, because every time I sit down to write this, to do any more on the story, I go over everything I've done. And sometimes I never get any further than that. I'm changing the stuff that I've done, or sometimes I'm ripping the whole thing up and going on to something else. And the third thing, which is probably a wee bit further than you are, is be nice to your editor. Because the editor's the guy that pays the money. And I've always made a point of being really nice to my editors and getting on really well. Unless I decide I'm not going to work for them anymore and say, you bastard.
Do you run your scripts through people? Do you have like trusted people you send them out to? Or?
Not very often, but I've been getting my partner to read my rocks and my spectres recently.
Yeah.
But no.
No, when you worked with Alan, how did that work? Would you write, you'd write almost separate things and then...
No, we would sit down and we'd talk out the bones of the story together and then we'd just write it frame by frame.
Okay.
You know, which can be laborious, but it can be really quick too. Like one day we wrote 9 episodes in one day. You know, which is good. And they weren't bad episodes.
What was that? I've heard you say that before. What
Doomlord.
It was, right, okay.
I think it was Doomlord. It was one of these Eagles through. There were 3-page episodes, so it wasn't such a feat.
Yeah.
But, you know, the episodes were quite good. I'm not sure it was Doomlord. I think we usually took more time over that laughing.
You never wrote any of the photo stories, did you? Did you?
Yeah, we wrote all those.
Did you ever participate in them? I often go through those stories and try and spot people in them.
No.
No? Okay.
No, I didn't have the time. It was really low budget. You know?
Yeah.
It cost the same in the end as the artwork. You know, we thought it would cut down a bit. It didn't cut expenses.
Sometimes you simply just go into a tunnel somewhere, or you walk out on the street and do something, and it was a bit like that, was it?
I didn't have much to. We would suggest ways that they could do things like Doomlord's spaceship. We'd stick a light in a colander. We would suggest things like that, but we never went out on the filming, and it was really up to them to sort it.
Okay. Any other questions? We've got any other questions from the audience? Yes, dude.
2000 AD has been through quite a lot of hands over its lifetime. It now seems to have settled in with Rebellion. Do you find them quite useful, quite great, good crit?
I think Rebellion have saved it. You know, I think it would have gone. It's... they've got quite an imaginative attitude to publishing, and I think it's largely the compilations that are keeping the comic going, and all the other ancillary streams of income that they derive. They've done very well. I'm very pleased that they have it.
And they're also releasing a lot of the old material now, aren't
they,
as well?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, good to see.
You've got some Mac 1 on your table, I think, have you?
Yeah, although I didn't write as many of those as... I'm credited with.
Right, okay.
No, it was a way when I was helping Pat with his early 2000 AD creation, the publisher wasn't willing to pay me. Right. So Pat would write scripts and pay them to me.
I think Pat mentions that in his book, doesn't he, I think?
Does he?
Yeah, I believe he does.
Pretty much. I mean, I might have written a couple of Mac ones, but I told them I didn't want any royalties from it. They said they weren't paying them anyway.
I know a couple of people in the audience went to the 40th anniversary. Was that a good event for you?
It was wonderful.
Amazing event, wasn't it?
Yeah, really good. In terms of rock sales, it was great. Three times any other.
If there's a 60th, do you think we should get the...
You could dig me up.
I don't think so. Come on, John. Will we get the John Wagner, Pat Mills shed? Do you think we could recreate the shed somehow?
You could probably buy it. You've seen a picture of it.
I haven't.
I went to Dundee for a con, and this 2000 AD fan who worked for the local newspaper took me around on it. Tour of all the old places, and I said, listen, I want to go across to Wormit, this is across the Tay where we worked, and see if I can find that house and get a picture of the shed. So Wormit had changed. It took me a long while to figure out what house it was, and we knocked on the door, and this wee woman opened it, and I said, would you mind if we took some pictures of your shed? And no.
Oh, not again.
So we went round, and it was still there, the shed. And it was great to see it.
Yeah, that must have been a great little... I mean, Pat mentions in his book that you and him had a few words.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think what split us up is it was a space about this wide.
Right, okay.
Right, and we had this paraffin heater in it that was... putting out fumes. I don't know how that affected us. And wasps flying everywhere, and
it can't in be the warm end, either. Surely it must
well,
be.
Well, with the paraffin heater, it was warm.
It was okay. Yeah.
And in the end, we ended up standing toe to toe, about to slug each other, and we said, "All right, time to bring this partnership to an end." It's just because it's so tough, and like you're starting out, and you. Sorry, and you don't know quite what you're doing, and it leads to tensions, and you want to do it one way, and he wants to do it another, and you just nobody's sure.
Any young bucks back then, you headstrong, I suppose, with what you were trying to say.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And it can be quite difficult, sort of working your way into a company. Like we ran out of paper, and we had to type up this text story. And Pat had this tracing paper. So he says, we'll do it on this tracing paper. So he typed up this story and sent it in. And he got the most abusive, what the hell is this, from the editor. And all he had to do was stick it down on some white paper and he could have read it easily. But no, he wasn't having it. So we had to go out and get paper and type it again. Oh, dear.
Because back in the people forget, it was that, wasn't it? It was the lever hitting the paper. It wasn't, you can go backspace by then, could you?
Oh, well, it was back in the days of typewriters. You had to judge whether a page was so messy that you couldn't send it in. Could you just cross out? And then some pages, they just look terrible.
Do you have any of those original pages over that you've done?
No, I don't think I do.
Okay, yeah. Interesting. Any other questions? Yes, go on.
It's always a pleasure to hear you speak, John. I went to the 2040th as well. Okay. Five copies of Oxo. They sent me the one in the post as well.
Nice. So, good.
And it's always nice to hear you reminisce. I just wonder if there's the market, and if you have done it, or if you never would actually give them a chance, would you want to have your say? Because we've heard from, Pat, we've heard from Steve McManus, we've heard from Steve Bishop.
Yep.
Do you think that one day you would be prepared to tell us your side of those early days?
No, I don't think so. People have asked me to do it, but I don't really have any interest in having a say. I would tell people about
your autobiography.
That would be quite spicy.
I knew you were going to say that. I'll read it.
Oh, one day when my mind finally goes, I might do it.
Yeah, I've got to say, it was a question I was going to get to. But yeah, I think we all would definitely like to see it. Do people come to you and ask, who are writing books about the history of 2018, do they come to you and ask for your account, and you think, I can't quite say that bit? That's
I said some things on my podcast with Michael Mulcher that got out.
Oh, did they? Oh, that's a long podcast as well. There's a few pints sank in that podcast.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I just wish we'd moved away from those women.
Cool. That's on the 2000 AD podcast. Anyway,
there's laughing women.
Super. Table. Yeah, there's nothing salacious there. Yeah. Yeah, sorry, we're fine. Any other questions? So, John?
Yeah, have you got any other sort of good stories sitting in your corner room?
There may be some, but I think I picked out the best.
Yeah?
And one day I might publish the porn story just in script form.
Yeah,
that'd be great. Name, maybe you choose one of your favourites.
TB Rover. Yeah.
Could be, yeah. John Probe.
That is a poor name, isn't it?
Yes, it is, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, when Pat Orridge, I don't know if he said this in his book, when he designed Mach 1. Originally, when Mach 1 punched somebody, the head would come off, or he'd punch right through them.
Right.
I thought that was great, but when the publishers saw that, they said, no.
They do it all the time now. Yeah. Something like The Boys or something like that. It's going to be all over it.
But they were gentler times.
Is there any stories from back in the sort of weekly comics you'd like to see come back? Or you might even think about redoing or something like that. I'd love to see, for example, a backup strip in the back of the next Rock series. It'd be like, maybe a four-pager or something.
Oh, yeah. I've never thought about it.
Right.
I like to create my own stuff and just go with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm never very comfortable working on someone else's.
Okay, but even something you maybe created back in the day, you could...
Oh, that's quite possible, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think... we're almost at time now, guys, but what do you think Dread would make of Rock?
He wouldn't have any time for it.
Wouldn't last long, would he, you think?
Well, do you mean the comic? Or
no, the character.
Oh, Rock would knock shit out of Dredd.
You think so?
No, I don't think so.
It's a record.
Well, he would, actually. Yeah. Rock is a pretty powerful alien.
Yeah, yeah,
when you come down to it. You wouldn't take on Rock.
Yeah. Okay. And last one. You get to kill one of your characters.
Well, you know who this is.
I know where we're going with this. Yeah. Who'd you kill?
I would love to write the Death of Dredd script. I've asked them.
You have?
They won't let me.
They won't? Okay.
No. Even, if it was, I said, okay, it's like an Elseworld. It's a what if.
Yeah.
No.
Won't let you do it. No. Can you confide in us a little bit with what the story is?
I haven't given it any thought, really. It's not worth my while thinking unless I'm going to be allowed to do it. But I have considered doing it privately and sort of just selling 100 copies or so. But
like a bootleg Death of Dredd. Sort of, I like that idea. Yeah.
I'd like
it
was just a very normal death.
Yeah.
Human death.
Yeah, well,
gets knocked over. Yeah.
You get a lot of trouble for that. It's like Giant's death in Blockmania. Everyone complained about that. But the thing is, I mean, most people, if they get killed, it's just sort of incidental. You know, something falls on their head. Or,
They do, don't they? Yeah, you hear about it, yeah. The maybe that guy you left on the island all those years, the traffic island, maybe you can come back and do him. It's a bit of social justice, finally. Great. Any questions from the audience before I finish? No? Well, what's been your favourite character over the years?
Well, I think there's been a lot that I've enjoyed. I like Button Man.
Yeah.
Oh, obviously, I like Dredd. Dredd's been very good to me. I like Strontium Dog. But especially I like Rock of the Reds and Bogeyman.
Bogeyman, who we didn't talk about, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're big fans of his.
I've got one copy of the Bogeyman book with me. Okay. There'll never be any more, so I don't want to...
Right.
I want to keep a good bunch of them, too.
With your relationship with BHP, is that not something you would maybe bring back or consider?
I don't have a very good relationship with the artist.
Okay, right.
So that's the problem.
Is it a sort of joint ownership thing, is it?
Or yeah.
It is? Yeah. Oh, okay.
Same with Rock. I mean, everyone down to the letter has got a wee piece of Rock.
Right, okay.
Yeah. I mean, the letter hasn't got much, but he's got something.
Yeah.
And they never get recognised. And I think a good letter is really important.
That's Jim Campbell on Rock.
Jim Campbell.
Yeah, top of my head, yeah.
He's not just the letter, though. He did the logo, which I think is a great logo.
Yeah, it's great.
He does all the layout. And, you know, he's really, really good.
Yeah.
And his sound effects. A lot of letters these days don't do good sound effects, but Jim's are superb.
Brill. Nice one. Ladies and gentlemen, John Wagner.
You want another one?
Okay, so this, I'm not going to do an intro like I normally do for the show.
Oh, you're not? Okay.
No, because... for those, most of you here have probably heard the Awesome Comics podcast.
If you have, we apologise.
If you have, we apologise. If you haven't, then we are a podcast that talk about small press and independent comics and publishing. We get guests on, interview them when they're not off going to the toilet. And we talk about making comics, marketing comics, publishing and just everything, as well as having a lot of humour, jokes. It's not really an all ages show, is it?
It is today.
It is today. Yes. Yes. So thank you, because normally it takes me a lot of hard work to try and rein these two in, but now they have to be reined in. That's nice. So yes. So small press. Oh, we're getting more guests in. This is amazing.
Well, audience.
Audience.
Yeah.
Well, they're all my friends. So for those who haven't heard the show, obviously we talk about small press, but there's lots of people who listen to the show and want to make comics. A lot of you are actually in the room who have started making comics. So, for my two lovely hosts, Dan Butcher, the creator of Vanguard.
Hello.
It's even funnier face to face than when you normally say it.
I'm a simple guy.
And the writer for Dan. Yeah.
This is where you all are.
We're also joined by a guest,
yes,
who is the creator of the amazing book Surface Tension. It's Mr. Jay Gunn.
Hey.
You already had your round of applause. And we also have a Down the Tube contributor and the creator of Cotton Kung Fu and the all-round legend. Yeah.
Hello.
It's Mr. Tony. Now, let's start. I mean, this, we say it's an awesome comics podcast live, but anyone who's heard the show knows that there is no structure to the show. So there's no actual way that it's going to go. So we thought we'd just talk about small press comics and for those people that want to actually create them. So in this market, as we speak, in 2018, do you think that it is the right time to launch your first ever sort of independent creation? Mm.
Interesting, because we had a conversation earlier about sales being down the toilet, aren't we?
With comics in general.
Yeah. I think the one I quoted last night to the guys was Savage Dragon. If anyone knows Savage Dragon, which is a million-selling book in the 90s, is now selling 3,500 a month, which is terrible. But we manage to sell in the good hundreds, don't we, for small press?
Yeah.
When we sell them.
Yeah.
So the division between the big publishers and the small press is certainly sliding down to be almost the same thing, I think. So I think it is a good time. I think with distribution and with digital sales and stuff like that, I don't think... What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, I think the marketplace is definitely shifting and it's evolving, isn't it? And it's mutating. You know, all things to survive must sort of mutate and adapt to... change.
It's quite funny you say mutate with your book.
Oh, absolutely. It's all about mutations. Monsters.
Yeah.
So I think that the, you know, the publishing industry is going through kind of quite seismic shifts in terms of changes. You know, the way we get our media is changing. You know, most of it's going digital. You know, not many people buy things like, you know, DVDs or Blu-rays anymore in terms of movies, and a lot of people read comics on their Kindles. I came back from Japan quite recently, and I see a lot of people on the tube and the metro down there all reading big, thick, fat, chunky, you know, manga books. And I hardly saw any this time, but I saw a lot of people reading manga on the whatever their smartphones or tablet devices are. And that's like a really hardcore comics market. So you could see the change there, even in terms of something as hardcore as Japan.
Even in practicality, I don't know if you guys seen those. They're like Yellow Pages style comic books. They're enormous, so I can understand the kind of the jump to digital.
Yeah, it's carrying around those big phone books.
Yeah.
And also Japanese comics tend to have quite a lot of porn in them as well, so they can probably hide it on their phones a bit easier.
I don't know what pornography is.
I'm not taking that any further. So what's that like then, would you say, because it's more digital and web comics? Do you think they're more popular now than ever? Because Dan, you do a webcomic. You've been doing a webcomic for
how
many years now?
About 7 years.
Seven years. Which I think, you know, kudos to you. Because there's a lot of webcomics that die on the vine, don't they? They'll start for a couple of years and then they'll die off.
I don't think people realise how hard it is to make a comic and consistently get it online. Yeah. It's a lot of work.
Because you're essentially weekly self-publishing.
Yeah.
Right?
That's what I mean. Doing. When you're making a book for print, you can push the print deadline back and kind of work on a bit more of the pages to make them look better. Whereas when the webcomic and you're updating twice a week, that page has to be, you've not got the audience. Basically, it's got to be online, otherwise the audience just starts dropping away. The only thing they've got as a reliable factor is you to keep updating on a constant kind of schedule. And if you start getting flaky, the audience pretty much just leaves, because they want to invest in your story. And if you can't do the basics of getting your page online on time, the confidence goes. So
supply and demand as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you have to,
it's such a wealth of great webcomics as well.
Yeah.
That you, if you're not competing.
But do you think like webcomics is almost the first option that a lot of people just say you want to create your first comic? No matter what it is, you know, no matter how grand the vision is, it could be a small autobiographical comic, but you want to put it out in the sort of public. Do you think webcomics is the better way to go rather than heading towards printing or heading to a publisher? What do you think for someone first starting out?
Definitely. Is it good for buzz, do we think? Start with?
Yeah.
Or webcomics to do.
Yeah, start the first few. We've seen quite a few that have done that over the years.
It's quite a few. Yeah. I mean, in the world of Kickstarters now, how many Kickstarters have we seen that a collection of a webcomic, and immediately you've got a 200-page book that you can pledge on? I mean, I've done it this week. There's a webcomic I really like. I immediately pledged on the collected edition.
It's a weird situation when you think that something that people can get for free, they still want to... Like, you've published Vanguard, you know, a comic that you could read for free, but is somehow selling really well as a hard copy as well.
It's not somehow, it's quite good.
Yeah. I can't imagine why. No, it's very good. It's, and it's selling really well in the paper format as well to people who've read it already.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's kind of an age thing with the times we're living in, but we kind of seem to be in between this period of moving from print to digital and trying to find the lay of the land, how that's working. I'm very still much print. I don't mind reading digital, but I'd rather have the print copy in my hands.
We're all of the generation who loves the books to have on the shelf.
But say 20 years' time, I'm not sure
if
the kind of the clamour for owning something in print is going to be the same. I really don't.
Yeah, I think the kind of publishing industry is going more towards the kind of the vinyl market, isn't it? It's becoming that physical thing you like to own, but it's becoming a niche, but you can still be, you know, you can still be the king of your niche. You know, like certain types of genres of music and stuff, there can be niche sales, but they can have a very loyal following. And I think with comic cons like this, you know, a lot of the people here are probably like the loyal following of comics, and you get a few people coming in just to check it out, see what it's about.
So. Yeah, yeah. I think you're right. I think in terms of printed media, much like say vinyl, but also Blu-rays and DVDs. I listen to podcasts that talk about horror movies. And some of them are really sort of obscure, strange things, but they'll put out quite an expensive and sort of luxurious Blu-ray that has a special
Arrow video.
Yeah, and they'll. But they're marketing to a specific person, aren't they? The collector. So do you think that comics... We've got the Marvel and we've got the DC. That's the general public of comics, isn't it? If you look on the wide scale. When it comes to the smaller, more independent, do you think it benefits people to almost market towards a collector rather than...
Interesting, yeah. So you go the full-size hardback, you go the artist edition type thing, coffee table book.
Because, as we know, the people that love comics and that collect comics and want those books, they will shell out £20 for a book. They will, you know, they will want the hard covers.
I think the only issue I have with that, and I think it's a very valid approach, is I went to my local branch of Waterstones a few months ago to look at the graphic novel section.
I always do that.
Just to see what's on there. And there were a lot of really interesting books, a lot of good indie boutique sort of publishers. But the prices were really high. Mm, I mean, they were great books, but they were even out of my price range. And I considered myself a collector. So I do worry that it's becoming a very privileged industry. It's people with money, and so therefore, if you're going to spend £20-30 on a book, that kind of almost like dictates your subject matter. So if you're writing a story about, say, I don't know, working class kids or something, if such a thing even exists anymore, you're selling it to a market that's going to spend £20-30 on a book, and they're therefore going to be fairly affluent people. Yeah. Do they want to read about those kind of subjects? Does the pricing affect the subject matters you're writing about?
It's weird, isn't it? Because superheroes have always been the go-to genre for, people who haven't perhaps got a lot of money but want to dream big. Do you know what I mean? And the sort of perhaps the sort of more arty thing is more the Hampstead Heath crowd, and it's an interesting idea that. But the problem you've got as well is that if you are making and you are a full-time comics creator, the revenue needs to be coming in for the sales to enable you to create the books.
Yeah.
And if the revenue isn't coming in, what do you do then? Do you become a part-time creator? If you're a part-time creator, how many books are you going to be able to draw, for example, every month? Probably, I would say, a few pages, if anything, and get them through a publisher. So the fact that money isn't coming is will be reducing both the quality and the number of comics eventually, I've seen,
I think one of the, you could say, troubling aspects of heading towards that more niche market is I think you're missing out on a massive audience, which is the kids. Every single one of us who are now the collectors who are spending the £25 or £30, we went into the newsagent every week and picked up a comic and for a pound or whatever, and that's what's made us what we are now. But certainly those big hardcover books that we like collecting, they're not marketed to an all ages there's not many parents who go, "Oh yes, I'll spend £30 on this for you." That'll shut you up on the.
Is that your park. Voice when you're in Waitrose?
Yeah,
that's your Waitrose voice.
Yes. Where's my Dauphinois?
We had a guest on from the Phoenix comic last week. I'd love to see the Phoenix comic in all newsagents or by the till of shops to buy, because
there's not enough plastic tat stuck to the cover.
By the Phoenix, to the artists are over there, by the way.
Get first 4 issues for a pound.
Again, to go back to my observations of being in Japan, is I know it's a very different culture in terms of it being very mainstream. Like, they don't have comic book shops because every bookshop has manga in them. So it's just, they're just books over there. Yeah. But the one thing I do notice is, again, with the kind of the more sort of boutique publishers, the paper quality is amazing, the binding is amazing, the hardback, whatever, all the different, it reeks of quality, very expensive. Whereas in Japan, to buy a traditional manga, serial manga, a story of its own, you get maybe 100 plus pages in a small sort of digest format size that you can stick in your bag or your handbag or your pocket. It's very printed on very cheap paper, almost like the 2000s sort of
newsprint style
paper. Not very good quality paper, it's like pulp paper.
Yeah.
But it keeps their prices really, really, really low because their print costs are low. They very rarely do colour.
Yeah.
Usually always black and white. And they sell mass, you know, mass numbers. Obviously, again, very different caveat being very different culture in terms of its mainstream reach. But it is interesting how Western books are going more and more to this high-end quality, very small sales. And as the quality keeps improving and improving and the costs keep going soaring for the publishing costs with little revenue in return versus this dirty, cheap... But I would say the Japanese market has just so many ranges of different types of stories, stuff that doesn't get released over here, different genres.
Well, they've got golf comics.
One of the big comics, one of the big mangas last year was like about a jazz player in the jazz scene in Tokyo. But, you know, they turn jazz playing into almost like if it was like a martial arts or something.
Yeah.
And it was a huge seller. No, that would not be a big seller over here. But again, it's just the print quality is very, you know, pulpy and cheap.
Vince has got a lot of jazz mags.
I see. Do you play the trombone or anything?
Wasn't he remarking that Brassed Off is like a really popular film from there?
Oh, yeah, he said this.
Yeah, yes. You'd be surprised what... I went to a bar in Tokyo a few weeks ago and I was drinking with the director of the Death Note films. It was just me and him having a chat.
Name dropper.
I dropped the name of the films, but not his name. He did Gamera movies and things like that. And he just wanted to know about British movies. We had a big conversation about Ken Loach films. Wow. Yeah, director of one of the Godzilla films, one of my favourite ones, GMK, Death Note, just wanted to know about Ken Loach and Mike Lee movies.
Yeah.
So those things can have reach in Japan.
But that only shows we need to get back to the grassroots, don't we? I mean, when you think about the sales, and like you're talking about these expensive hardback books and stuff like that, where does the future lay? If these big comic companies can't produce affordable comics for kids in shops, or just affordable comics for adults in shops, where does it lie? It lies with the small press, then, I would suggest. Because we have the benefit of having a day job and being able to do comics as well. Sure, we can't keep up with the frequency of Marvel and DC monthly, but at least we're producing comics. And let's face it, we're not making much money off this. I mean, Vince is a millionaire, me and Dan aren't.
I do shop at Waitrose.
But that might be the answer.
Yeah.
We have to make them part-time.
I mean, and also, the small press and indie scene, the quality level, I mean, you just see, walking around this convention here, the quality from every table is just massively higher than it's probably, would you say, ever been? It's unbelievable.
And the range of ideas. Mm. I mean, there was a cry in for the big two to get more diversity and different storylines. If you go out on that floor out there, there's all of that.
Yeah.
Well, the publishers at the moment, I went through this in the video game industry 10 years ago, before the sort of the indie game scene arrived. And the games companies 10 years ago, before digital delivery services, you know, became more prevalent, were very risk averse with the kind of projects they'd greenlight. The culture was to say no, because nobody wanted to be the one to greenlight a project that would lose someone money. And when you're a small publisher, which most of these publishers are, you know, I can name probably quite a few indie publishers right now, but they're probably very, very small operations. You know, they don't want to have a turkey on their hands because the sales are so low already. So, you know, even from my experience dealing with publishers currently, you know, you get a lot of setbacks, a lot of we don't want to publish that kind of story. It's just, you know, it's not really what our audience wants. Mm. And I kind of don't know what those publishers want in terms of audience. Is it people with lots of money who want to buy certain types of books? And does that's negating certain subjects being published. But as you both said, all three of you, you know, on that shop floor, there's a real diverse range of voices and books out there,
and
which is really interesting.
Even though publishers, maybe they might not take the shot, in this day and age, in the, you know, the Indiegogos, the Kickstarters and stuff, more and more people are heading that route as well. So if the publishers don't bite, then they can, there is options for you. There, you know, but with that comes the caveat. Don't go into it thinking, I'm going to do a Kickstarter, that's how I'm going to print my comic. A Kickstarter is a campaign, it is not a guarantee.
Hard work as well.
We've seen a lot of successful Kickstarter campaigns. There's a lot of people here that have done, you know, campaigns, and they're fantastic, but they're hard work, and nothing is a guarantee of success. Going to your first convention is not a guarantee of success. Going to, like, for instance, Thought Bubble. I went to my first Thought Bubble and thought, this is the Mecca, this is the shrine, this is the day I sell out. That was a massive learning. I had to step back, and once I stepped back, I could then enjoy the convention, if you know what I mean, when I took myself out there. And were you there that year? No, I don't think you were. I had a really good year that year. When you make comics, I think, especially if you're doing it as a hobby, do you know what I mean? If it's not your full-time job,
you've still got to enjoy it.
I
worry. We do this podcast because we enjoy it, because we're not getting paid for it. We're not, you know, we've decided to make a comic because of it, and we're not getting paid for that. So why are we doing this?
Yeah.
But it is for the love, and I think when there's no room in independent publishing or small press publishing for cynicism or money grabbing, because the money isn't there, and the quality won't be there unless you're creating for yourself.
Let's from what you said, let's push it on to Jason for a second. Mm. Because when you drove out in your Bentley out, you're in an out drive with all your money from the gaming industry. You decided we talked about this on the way down about your love for comics. You decided to do a comic. What? How did that happen? Because you were involved in a lot of big game names.
You know, some really big games. Not necessarily all, you know.
They're all involved you,
no, not at all. No, I circulated around other big games. It was because that culture in the gaming industry 10 years ago became, you know, risk averse, because the whole industry was feeling change. You know, things like smartphones had just arrived, mobile devices, Xbox, PlayStation, Nintendo were all vying for the same space. Mm. So it was all, so the kids that had the money, or the adults, to spend on a game were suddenly finding their spending was fractured between different things.
Okay.
And, you know, for example, I remember back in the day, a long time ago, where, you know, games industry used to say we're competing with things like, you know, oh no, it was Games Workshop. I did some stint work for Games Workshop a long time ago, and they said their biggest competitor was things like Big Macs and things like that, because if a kid's got a couple of quid in his pocket, he might buy some junk food, or he might, you know, it's totally low level stuff, but he might buy some junk food, or he might buy some little, you know, D&D figures and stuff. Mm. So they had to price their little figures competitively to McDonald's. So my worry with all these expensive books is, you could get a Netflix subscription for the price of an expensive book.
So it's like, yeah, Croydon, it was sort of on a level with the crack cocaine for some.
Yeah. Unless you're making it yourself.
Yeah. What's your competition supply and demand? So I always remember that conversation about the competitors for the Games Workshop being junk food, and so comics. For a lot of young people, they've got even more options to spend their money on. You could buy a 50 pence game, or some games even free, you know, because you pay later when you buy all the gubbins for it. There's so much competition now. So, you know, there's even more competition. So the marketplace is so fraction fragmented. So if you're a creator making a certain type of book, you know, choose a subject, you know, you can have competition potentially within your own industry, publishing industry. But also your audience, if they're going to spend money on that book, are they going to spend it on something else, on a different medium, like a computer game or something?
Yeah.
So I had this big conversation with someone recently last year, and I was saying, look, you know, if I'm going to make this book, I've got to budget at this, I've got to cut it down to these amount of pages, maybe it's got to even be black and white, because the subject dictates its pricing and its development. And, you know, I come from a production background, so, you know, I love making comics and I wear my silly creative, you know, geek hat and stuff. But I'm always thinking, I'm always mindful of other factors. If you want to make at least a tiny pittance out of what you're doing.
So the competition for your comic when it comes out next year almost decides the way it's done.
I think so. I think, you know, sometimes some artists can do beautiful watercolored painted books. Mm. It reaches 50 people. And then they're like, oh, Kel Supree, you know, I'm poor. Well, you go, well, yeah, that's fair enough if you want to make a watercolor beautiful book. But, you know, but you've got to realise that we're working in a different era now to the comic industry 20 years or so ago.
Yeah.
You know, look at comics like Dan Dare, you know, from The Eagle in the 1950s. That was selling like a million copies a week or something crazy, stupid. Yeah. And maybe that's wrong, but it was around that, you know, it was astronomical figures.
Yeah.
So you could have a team of artists doing beautiful watercolour dander comic strips, because that was finding its audience and those guys were making a lot of money from it. You know, Image Comics in the 90s, there was that big bubble, wasn't there? That big boom, crazy. And then bust.
Yeah, Rob Liefeld made a spaceship.
Yeah.
Still lives on it.
So I think you've got to have a lot of fun making a comic. But you've got to really be mindful that you're not going to be rich from it. Very rarely.
Because making comics, as much as like they're a labour of love, and do it because it's the story you want to do, but if you're making a comic and you want the general public to see it,
then you have to think about the people who are reading it. You have to think about the audience. I don't understand when people sort of say, oh, I've made a comic, but it's not, I've done it for me, I've not done it for anyone else. Then why are you publishing? Why are you putting it out there?
Yeah.
Stop laughing at the hand gestures I'm making.
We're bringing them to see them.
Yeah, but you do get those people who are so, well, it's almost pretentious in a sense, that like, oh, my art is more important than you. Then don't have a convention table, don't do anything, because we're doing this for people to read. Why are we all here? I mean, why are we doing a podcast? Because we want people to listen and hopefully discover some new books. You know, that's why we're doing it.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a fine line with that, and I agree with you, and not pandering to what people want. I think that's where we got.
Definitely. Don't be cynical. I've worked on projects in the past in the game industry that were just purely made. We threw loads of projects at a green lighting committee. They chose the most cynical commercial thing we could have invented, as opposed to all these amazing, creative things. It was the most. It was just reeked to commercial, wannabe success, and it was a flop.
Yeah,
so you've got to be.
You're always behind the curve. By the time it comes out as well,
exactly.
So don't make a comic because you think people will like it.
Especially if you're doing a comic that is like four issues, you release the first issue and then don't do the next issue based on the feedback. Then it's just going to turn into.
We quite like the abuse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, we've warned people about making zombie comics because that's kind of genre seems quite well mined.
But if there's a good zombie comic out there that is unlike any of the others, it's worth checking out.
Because I was thinking about the movies, like, oh, I'm sick of zombies. Then something like, I don't know, Train to Busan would be like, oh, that was great. Yeah. I love zombies.
Zombie Strippers come out, and that was
But throwing it back round to the webcomics, if you want to make a comic nice and cheap, stick it online, one of the free sites, get people reading it, and you can see how we go over there. If you find it tough doing a 15, 20 page comic on a webcomic, maybe doing comics isn't for you, I don't know. But it's definitely a test bed to see if you like doing that stuff, because you can get audience feedback pretty much straight away and see if it's your bag.
Well, let's ask this question then. What's the one, you can name one thing that turns you off about a comic as soon as you look at it. I'll go first. Spelling. Learn how to spell. You don't know the difference between you and you are.
And let's that's a big bug there. But do we classify that further? Because we're talking about interior art, because you're saying as soon as you look at it, that could be the cover. I've fallen for a cover many times. I think we all have, a lot of people in this room. Well, you have that uncomfortable, you open up the comic, and then you have to somehow figure out how to close the comic, put it down, nod at the creator, and walk away and never come back.
We're experts at this look now, where people hand us a comic over the table and we go, oh, this looks good.
To be fair though, we had the other story that we was talking about, a Moon Knight comic, which the cover was not representative of the interiors.
Iron Fist.
It was like, the interiors, this is great, and the story's great, but the cover just didn't. If you were judging purely on that alone.
Sort of flared poser image, wasn't it? What about you? You said cover. What about you? Do you want to go with cover, or are you going to say
I'll stick with cover.
Yeah.
You're going to go with the cover, aren't you?
That's the easy go-to.
Yeah. What about you, Jack? I've got to think about mine.
It could be so many things, but some people say fonts, don't they? Like lettering.
Yeah.
Whereas I know online a lot of people talk about like lettering and fonts, but I must admit I'm guilty of like reading loads of like French comic books or Japanese comic books that have been translated into English with just like typewriter fonts. It's I can get past the font and it's the story that counts. Even if it's just like the most basic font, it doesn't particularly weirdly bother me.
There's a lot of them, the translated stuff, they kind of
just standard.
They've seen the artistry seems to have gone from the font and typing in, it's just kind of like just hanging in the middle of the balloon. And
Times Roman font.
We love a font on our podcast.
One of the things that I will say, and it's not necessarily in the product itself, I will take it to the. Is the hard sell. If someone really hard sells me, I'm probably not going to buy your book, even if it's the best book in the world. Because I'm someone who likes to go to the convention table and then interact with the creator and ask them questions. And and if they're really nice to talk to, then they've probably just made a sale anyway, just by being a nice person. But when people like try to push a book in, I mean, you've had experiences of like people pushing books into your hands and trying.
There's this sales technique that came out a few years ago about people, you should put the book in their hands, they should hold it, And that puts me off. It's too pushy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Somebody wrote it in a book, I'm sure, once in one of these sort of TED Talks or something, or in a book somewhere, marketing book. And now every time you go somewhere, they try and get you to hold it, and you're almost like, you know.
Yeah.
I know what you mean, definitely.
Yeah. But also saying that, I do think my convention table pitch has gone downhill. since we started this show.
Yeah.
I just can't talk to people anymore.
Who's that one? There's one guest that came on the show, and we used to have a thing where you pitch a comic when you come on the show.
Oh, don't bring that.
They basically just took Vince to task on it, and it kind of
because I used the term pitch, because it is. I'm sorry, it is. Stuart McCune, he called me.
We love you, Stu.
Because we do. Because when you're at a table and someone's about to buy a book, let's face it, sometimes you have to boil it down to a paragraph. You know, if you like this, this is what the comic's about. You have to have that in your head. If you don't have that, then you'll lose people. You do lose people.
I do mine in mime.
Oh, yeah. Good. Yeah. You do need clothes, though, Tony. I think you should start wearing clothes when you do that.
Yeah, I'm not getting many sales in that.
No. Yeah.
When we're going to be selling our anthology comic, I always start with...
Now. Oh, which you can get at the table. £3 an issue.
£3, £1 digital.
Yeah. and where can you find it digitally, Dan?
The awesome comic pod.bigcartel.com,
brilliant.
I believe.
Yeah.
It's a sales machine.
Yeah. I always start off with a pitch of your one, which is Murder Road, which is like a John Carpenter unmade horror film.
Yeah.
And that usually snags in 90% of the audience. So by the time we get to my one at the end, the work's done. So
we never use mine because the panels are far too rude.
Well, we have to pick which of your panels to use. Our comic is not an all ages comic.
Yeah.
But wasn't it open at a table once and there was a spread and it's just like the C word on the page, huge. So good.
What comic?
We don't have the comic open in this venue.
No. Little baby Jesus up there.
He doesn't want to see that.
Oh, dear. Should we ask for some questions?
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
We've got another 10 minutes, haven't we?
Yeah.
Dare we say this? Does anyone have any questions?
I want to ask the audience some questions.
Oh
my
God.
Take the question. Then John, then one
question. Okay. Dan Vince, who would win
out
in a
flying
out
of
Van Gogh
and
the Red
Mask?
Ooh.
That's a good one. I don't, they wouldn't
fight, would
they?
Find out in the upcoming series.
John
Part
of the marketing team. Did you just say, I don't really want them to fight?
Well, the amount of people that die in his comic.
My characters do have the habit of dying.
You shot us in your comic, not
your
characters.
Go on, what do you want to
ask? So sorry, the audience.
Okay, audience, who...
Stand up here.
Who reads more comics digitally than traditional? Right, if you hold your hand up.
Who reads them
like do a
paper.
Percentage.
Who reads hard copies?
What percentage would you say that is? Just so the 19, people listening.
9 does is
80-ish?
Yeah, 85.
Okay,
who reads their comics digitally?
So I do both.
That's fine.
Okay.
So not too many digitally. That's probably about 20-25%, isn't it?
Yeah,
the Pop Capers guys, you don't read physical comics at all.
Well, sometimes we do it because we get so many sent into us digitally.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have the Comic House
app
as well.
Okay.
Comic House, who are a sponsor of the Awesome Comics podcast.
Done.
Yeah. That's thanks.
So about 85% traditional and about maybe 20% digital. So yeah, I wonder if this is like if this is skewed very young. I wonder what that mix would be.
Yeah.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about like say for example TV and films, like who still buys Blu-rays and DVDs? Well, says about 50,
I think we're looking at collectors' audience.
60%. Who watches just mostly digital nowadays?
Okay,
so still quite low.
Still buy Blu-rays.
Yeah.
How do you get time to come to a convention? You're very busy.
Because the comic industry is quite interesting if you do it parallel with the games industry.
Yep.
In that the games industry, a lot of that is going digital only, so not box products. I mean, I walked into a game a few months ago for the first time in ages, and I was like, oh my God, what is this? The horrible shop. Sorry, game, but, you know. And I didn't really want, I didn't enjoy the experience of being in the shops. You know, I know comic shops are much more, on the whole, a much nicer experience. Yeah.
They've become much nicer, haven't they?
Yeah.
In fact, when a lady used to walk in a comic shop, everyone's gone, I think. Yeah.
And sometimes, like in the game industry, there was a big battle at one point a few years ago that I was party to, where the retail high street shops, the big chains like the Asda, Tesco's of the world, had a standoff with people like Sony, because Sony wanted to introduce, you know, cheaper digital products on their online store, on the PSN store, and I'm sure Microsoft are doing the same, lower than the supermarket prices. But the supermarkets then said, well, we're still a big market for you, we will refuse to stock certain of your products on our shelves if you keep your price lower. So the kind of the big games companies had to raise their prices higher than the retail high street shop prices. So, which is why sometimes you go online to buy a game, it's more expensive than buying it in Asda, because there was a retail standoff.
Yeah.
So now I think obviously it's swung the other way, and digital can go cheaper now. And then because the whole indie scene exploded, where a game would cost something like £10, £5 on the online store, a shorter experience. But that's your equivalent of like the indie self-publishing comics. So a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine, self-published and self-funded his own game. A very, very small team of people called Hellblade. Took a huge gamble, and this week he won 5 BAFTAs for it.
Nice.
And that was all self-published, self-funded. Mm. So you can ride the whirlwind of self-publishing. And we obviously, comics don't sell the same amount as games, but he was a really good example of taking a risk can pay off, and games and comics are kind of similar in terms of, you know, how those mediums are, you know, absorbed and digested by an audience. It's similar parallels.
Publishers do sometimes get the pricing wrong on digital. We've shared it where, like, they're asking £20
on a weekly basis. I will send them an image.
Graphic novel.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to buy that digital, because
I've thought that as well.
Yeah.
I've gone to buy some digital comics and just thought, whoa, it's just just not.
Yeah.
So the warehouse is running low. Control C, Control V.
Exactly.
B,
yeah.
A couple of times. There you go. Stocks right. Back up.
Here's a question for the audience. Would you spend £3 on an actual physical comic?
Yes.
Would you spend £3 on exactly the same comic, but it's only in digital?
How many pages is the comic? Yeah.
We're talking a 30-page comic.
Okay.
Yeah, 30-page comic.
Five.
One.
So,
two.
Depends on the team, I guess.
Yeah.
For me.
Mm. But that's a massive difference, though. I mean, obviously this is an audio medium, so no one's seen what just happened.
Describe it to us.
But we've got that bit.
Yeah, pretty much most of the room held their hands up to buy physical, but probably 5%.
A bit more than that.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting, I think. Because if you think about it, it's exactly the same. Playing devil's advocate here, because I think digital books should be way cheaper than they are. But if you think about it, the product is exactly the same, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think with some digital comics, I was going to buy the volume 1 of Inside Mobius, because I've been waiting a very long time for it to be translated to English. And I thought it was very expensive to buy the actual, you know, physical copy. It went out to print or out of, you know, it just was really expensive, and it kind of seemed to dry up the sales on Amazon and stuff, and it was really hard to find. So I thought, oh, I'll buy the digital version. And the digital version was still 18 quid or something. And I was like, why is it so expensive?
Because I'm an old man and I don't understand the internet.
You don't know what digital means, do you?
I think it means something else.
No, not what you think.
Okay.
And a hard drive is not what you think.
And riding a horse, who went and made a noise. And I worry that all my digital files are held by some weird company that lives in space. And that they will eventually steal all my comics.
Is that because you're a paranoid maniac, though?
Yes.
Who said that?
And occasionally I speak to you, I say, Vince, I'm worried. What if Amazon goes under? Where are my comics going to go? You usually go, shut up.
But no, Tony, there is a precedence of that actually happening, because the BBC started an online store a year or so ago.
Right.
You know, like their own version of like Netflix or whatever, but BBC. This wasn't the iPlayer, it was their own digital online store. And a mate of mine bought a load of Doctor Who episodes, and then the BBC closed it down. He lost all those episodes.
Yeah.
So it does. This was only last year or 2 years ago. It does happen.
So that room that will probably destroy my house one day, and I'll end up under a pile of dirty comics, dead.
Yeah.
It's worth it. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. There was that story of the woman with the Amazon account, and she had bought tons of books, and then there was a problem with her account, and they just stripped out all of her titles. Are gone. She had to kind of get in contact with customer services, but that is one of the fears of mine. But they also did it with the games industry. Like, your game is reliant on being on a server, and when that server's taken offline 2 years down the line, that game's,
you will only be able to play this game if it's
T-coaster
online.
It's all changing, isn't it? I mean, even for first time comic creators, if you get a publishing deal, you know, check your contracts, maybe get some legal involved, just look at like digital rights and where they're held, and you know, when the rights revert back to you, is it because they sold one, you know, did the publisher retain the rights to your work because they sold one digital copy in the last 5 years? You know, all that stuff is very interesting.
Watchmen, it's remained in print, so they've kept the rights to it. You know, it's a similar sort of idea, isn't it? Well, we're almost at the end, guys.
We are
almost at the end.
You're right, look a bit sad. Should we end it by recommending a book each? What do you think? That's how we normally end.
Can I go last?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, thanks.
I'll go first.
I'll go first.
Okay, go on first then. Yeah. Right then.
I recommend Awesome Comics, issue one.
That doesn't count.
Right, I'll go last.
I'm going to recommend two, because that's what I'm like. I'm going to recommend Slang Pictorial by Nick Prolix. Yeah, go and buy that. It's very good. He's at the table next to us, and just behind me, because that's where she likes sitting, by Periwinkle. By
I'll go next. You can't go wrong by getting anything off the Reckless Hero Boys. They're great comics, as well as Daryl Thorpe with this Four Ponies banner. He's launching a book today. Recommend Chuck King's Beast.
I will say that Daryl Thorpe is he's such
a lovely guy.
He's one of the nicest people. Oh, no, he's going to hear this, isn't he? Yeah. But also, he's just churning out a lot of work, and he's constantly creating and constantly making comics. And I think it's that kind of energy that we do need more of. Because I think every one of us has the moment where it's like, the sigh moment, the one that's like, oh, this is hard work, you know, this is, you know. But seeing someone like Daryl's like, oh, yeah, it's like Red Bull in human form. and it's that sort of energy that I think independent comics needs.
Other drinks are available.
Oh yeah, Monster. Okay.
Well, God, I'm going to kind of recommend possibly a downer of a book.
Oh, here we go.
And it's a book about comics, so it's not really a comic book. But it was probably one of the few books about comics that actually brought a tear to my eye. Literally a tear running down my cheek, I think. And it's the book about the comic creator Frank Hampson, and it's called Tomorrow Revisited.
Oh, we talked about this earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And for anybody who wants to get into publishing, and I mentioned contracts earlier, you know, to do with digital rights and things like that, this is just the story of about one of Britain's most talented comic creators in his era. He's kind of forgotten now, but he produced and his team produced amazing, beautiful-looking comics. So we're selling a lot of copies, as I mentioned earlier, via Eagle. But he overlooked his contract, and he didn't actually sign a deal that retained him all rights. Oh. And when the Eagle was sold to a big newspaper corporation...
By a vicar.
The Eagle was held by a vicar. His mate, the vicar, we're in a church. had sold his rights to a newspaper corporation, and Frank Hampson lost all rights to his creation, Dan Dare. And then they fired him, and he wasn't allowed to actually even draw full pictures of Dan Dare at comic conventions and stuff. And he spiraled into depression, cancer, and died fairly young, in his 60s, this kind of forgotten artist, this amazing guy. So, but the book has amazing artwork in there, his team of artists that he's worked with, he shows all these like techniques, and he would build models of spaceships and masks and things and photograph it all and use it to paint from and things. Amazing. But ends on this terrible, terrible note. So it's a reminder of anyone getting into this crazy industry, this crazy industry, that no matter how talented you are, you've really got to have your back.
Which is why I've copyrighted Murder Road. Yeah. Exactly.
I can't believe I've got to follow that.
So pick it up.
Right. Well, okay. I know the right two to pick up. One of them is a web comic that I'm a big fan of that I mentioned on the show, and it's called Ghost of the Gulag. Which is I've forgotten the name of the artist now, he's going to kill me, but it's basically about a Siberian tiger in a sort of post-war Russia, and there's like tigers, there's wolves, there's a war between basically wolves and wild boars, and there's this one-eyed tiger who's caught in the middle of it,
and it's absolutely phenomenal storytelling. You can read it all online, ghostofthegulag.com. He has just launched his Kickstarter. Now, it's an American creator, so his Kickstarter includes a hefty, if you want a printed version of it, for this is a 200-page book. If you want to get a printed version, then you do have to cough up like £20 for the delivery, which normally puts me off 99% of American.
He loves a deal.
Yeah, I love a deal. I don't like spending money on anything, even though I shop at Waitrose. No, but this book I love so much that I went for the. I want the book. So if you haven't checked it out yet, it's brilliant. It is a dark story. It's not an all ages story, but it's well worth your time checking out. And to bring the tone up, our last episode was about the Phoenix, which is a weekly kids comic, and after that I signed up for a subscription for the Phoenix where you can get 4 issues for £1. I got my first issue this week, immediately opened it, and you know, it's just massive fun and just creativity, and you know, it's awesome. So I'm going to be sticking with it. So if you want something fun to end with,
yeah, please. You know,
and to be fair, it is our last hope, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're our last hope for comics in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. The Phoenix, you can get it in Waitrose and WH Smith. I can get
Waitrose paid. Don't even sponsor us.
No, they don't. Yeah. I don't know.
Comic House sponsors.
Yeah. Comichouse.com. Yeah. No, but definitely check out the phoenixcomic.co.uk. I can't believe I remember all these.
Yeah, nice one.
I know, it's very good, isn't it? It actually sounded like I was scripted, but everyone in this room knows how unprofessional I am. This is the same amount of notes that I would have for a weekly show.
Okay.
It's good.
Yeah. It's actually a mess. So thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this. Was it a podcast live? Can we call it that? No. I mean, if any of this audio turns up, then it's going to be in the next episode.
Yeah, so it'll be in the next episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But don't bank on it.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
So what time is it now?
It's 2:00. We've just done our panel.
Done our panel. We are
right. Triumph.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it was a triumph.
Yeah, it went very well. Thank you to everyone that joined us for that panel. If the audio does come out, then you've probably just heard it.
Yeah.
But
it might not.
It might not, but we'll see. We enjoyed it anyway. Yeah. So thank you to everyone that turned up.
Nice questions, didn't we?
Yeah.
Jay Gunn, as always, was a gent, a scholar.
A dude.
And
he's got some real valuable insights into kind of small press and making comics in general. He's a very, very articulate and well-informed chap.
Yeah, that is big words you're using.
I'm Little Lord Fauntleroy.
Yeah, I don't know. And considering you said I'm knackered.
Yeah. It's 2:00 and it feels like it's fucking 7.
I've got sweaty balls.
And I'm delirious. Yeah. So it's going to be quite an afternoon. I tell you what though, it has been a spectacular success for Vanguard.
Yeah, we've done well. Was it 9 books sold?
And these are, you know, this isn't like individual issues. Vanguard is a proper. How many pages?
It's the trades. There's 5 issues in one and 4 issues in the other, but they're like 200 plus pages. So it's done all right.
Yeah.
I didn't realise Davey Leach is over there.
Oh, yeah, Davey Leach is over there.
Yeah, right, Dave. Yeah, he says you're right.
Yeah. Is he asleep?
No, he's awake for a change.
There is a Hulkbuster armour over there, which. I tell you what,
when you get close to it, surprisingly plastic.
It looks, but it looks amazing though.
Yeah, that's one you can buy. That's not one he's made.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I still think it looks nice, but
awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What we might do is we might get a picture taken with
be
it
good.
And then post it up on the page.
Just push him over.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh dear. Tony's Nutbuster armor.
Nutbuster.
How tough's your armor, mate? I mentioned digital on the panel.
Yeah, he's very proud. He's very, very. Look, stop.
We got some laughs there, which I'm like,
because normally when we do the show, we're completely unaware of people laughing.
I'd assume they don't.
Yeah, so I laugh at my own jokes. I'm painfully aware of. I laugh at my own jokes.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we doing like a mid-pod thing? Yeah, is that what we're doing? Oh, right. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. What do you think it was?
I don't know.
Got to pad out the show somehow.
I don't fully understand them.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Over the next couple of hours, we're going to see if we can get a couple more interviews.
Yeah.
I've yet to do my shopping properly yet.
I haven't done any shopping yet.
No.
I'm going to be buying that Adventures of Captain
Bulldog. So, at the end of the day, Susie Gander just jumped in and tried to...
Who's the younger lady that would like your signature?
Oh, everyone wants Dan Butcher to sign something.
I'll be right back then.
Right, well, we're going to get on with the show and, goodbye.
Love you.
I'm here with Iz from Cardiff, Sice. What's the lineup for Cardiff and what's the date, etc.? Do you want to give us a little rundown?
Yeah, cool. Okay, it's June the 2nd. It's in the Mercure Holland House Hotel. It's very posh. It's where we first started in 2011. So we're coming home, which is great. It's a bigger venue than last year. And the guests are Chris Wildgoose.
Hey! can you get anyone better? Or
and John Davis Hunt and Rachel Smith. And I've gone blank already.
Laura Wargoose?
Laura Trinder, Laura Trinder's going to be there. And Abby Bulmer and loads of people. It's going to be really, really cool.
Is it a bit 2000 AD? Because I know you've had a few 2000 AD guests in it. Rob Williams going to be there?
Rob Williams is going to be there, yeah, definitely. And all the usual Cardiff, the Taffia crew. Patrick Goddard, Dil Teague, David Roach, Mike Collins. It is 2000 AD heavy, but it's actually not as 2000 AD heavy as it has been previously. Because I'm trying to
branch out.
I'm not
saying it's a bad thing, I'm saying it's a good thing. Yeah.
But we've done it for a good couple of years running. So I was trying to get a bit more of a mix and a bit more of a just wide ranging, really. Oh, thank you very much. I've just been past the God Machine is coming.
And I love God Machine.
He's awesome.
He's like the best bloke ever.
He's like rock star, isn't he? He really is. Etherington Brothers and Cy Gurr as well. He's coming back.
Oh, cool.
And Simon Williams. So yeah, it's a nice like little eclectic mix.
Now, last year was your first year on your own running it. Is it same again this year?
Yeah, it's all me again. I've got a crew of volunteers on the day, but I'm pretty much doing everything myself. I've got a very glamorous webmaster, who's the other half, who's done amazing for me. But yeah, it's just a little on me, so but it's good because I'm a control freak, so that works. Yeah.
So it was in the Masonic Hall last year. Now it's in a hotel. Yep. Bigger venue or smaller?
It is. It's a bigger venue. It's got about 10, 15 more tables space-wise, but it's one big space because I got feedback last year and it was basically the Masonic Hall was lots of little rooms, as you know. So I wanted to make it a bit easier to get around and for people to find everybody. And the feedback from previous years at the hotel was that it's a really good venue and it's floor-to-ceiling windows. So I put all the artists along there and they absolutely love it. So it's a really good space for them to sketch.
So where can people get the tickets and where can they follow you online, etc.?
Okay, cool. The Facebook and the Twitter and Instagram is all at Cardiff Expo. The tickets go through Eventbrite. Our actual website is sickyevents.wordpress.com, but that'll link you through to Eventbrite. You can just search Cardiff Expo and it's the top one above the Showmasters Con.
Obviously,
so I think I did rather well there. Thank you. And the tickets they're about £6 for adults and £5 for concessions. This year I've done concessions because I got a bit of feedback again about students and things. So there's students, young persons and disabled concessions and family tickets as well.
So £6.50 for an adult ticket, yes?
It's actually £6.
£6. Yeah. That's good value, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not bad, yeah. But I'm trying to make it... That's the whole ethos of Cardiff. It's about people being able to... I don't want to overprice things and I want to keep it realistic and, just a good ethical price, really.
Cool. Super. Thanks, Iz.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay, I'm here with the mighty John Late. We know him from Brethren Born and Late Nights.
Uh-huh.
Superstar, Ryan Reynolds lookalike.
Oldie version, 2016.
Yeah. But how's your day been at Leamington?
It's been really good. Really good, really enjoyable. Nice steady flow of people.
Is this your first time going to this?
No, I was here last year.
Oh, yes.
And again, it was that nice steady flow. Obviously, it doesn't get mega packed, but I think that's almost the beauty of it, really. There's none of that shoulder to shoulder.
You get more interaction, don't you?
Exactly, yeah. And there's been a lot of interaction with a lot of people in a lot of good ways.
Now, speaking of rewarding.
Rewards.
Now, the reason I wanted to talk to you is about, as we speak now, you have just launched a Kickstarter for a book that you've been toiling away at for quite a couple of years now.
Sure.
But some people may not know anything about.
Okay.
Because you've played it quite, apart from showing a bit of artwork, you've played it quite close to your chest, haven't you? Now, this is Away.
That's right, yeah.
And for those who don't know anything about it,
okay,
what is it about?
Okay, it's a sci-fi concept book, and it's about a firefighter who lives up in York, got a normal family life. He's been a firefighter for about 20 years, and he's in a fire, and the roof collapses on him, and he has a bit of an experience, and it's a bit of a strange one. He goes to the doctors afterwards, and they say, right, yes, she's starting to stress, but then he has another experience on his way home, and he's contacted by an alternate universe, don't you know? And basically they give him a bit of a mission of saying, you've got to save the world, you're the only one who can do it. But each time he goes away, he spends years, hundreds of years away, learning these new abilities, but only a few minutes have passed when he comes back.
I was wondering how the name came, you know.
Exactly. So there's a few connotations of way, what you can use it, but it's really how he deals with coming back with these new abilities and not being able to tell anyone, and that concept of what sort of mental health issues you're going to have if you haven't seen your family, your children, for hundreds of years, and you've got to act totally normal.
Yeah.
And it's an adventure book from there, really. So it's he's got to learn all the skills to be able to stop the impending invasion of a certain force that's going to be happening within the next 12 months.
But this is a force that essentially no one will know about. He'll be saving the world without anyone knowing what he's...
Exactly, yeah. So it's got a bit of a multiverse, alternate reality theme to it. The elevator pitch is it's a bit of a mix-up between Quantum Leap, Matrix, 12 Monkeys. It's got that sort of real... Yeah. It's
a bit sort of... a bit grittier than what people may know you for. I mean, obviously, Brethren Born was a very sort of almost a chronicle-like sort of like superhero kind of thing, and Late Nights is an all-ages family sort of superhero book. But this is it almost feels quite a personal book as well.
It is. I started writing it around about 8 years ago, which more or less coincides when I had my first daughter. And the job that I do, you know, you have to see a lot of horrible things, and you don't really want to talk about them afterwards. And it's coming back home and
for anyone who doesn't know, you're a fireman yourself.
Yes, I am. So it's that concept of coming back and thinking, right, what if one I didn't come back, or if I didn't see the family for a long time, how would it be? How would I feel about that? And it was really the first time I had a family. I thought, right, what, you know, this is my family now.
Yeah.
You ask yourself a few questions. I'm getting a bit deep and serious here, aren't I? I should tell a rude joke. I'll tell a joke in a minute. it was something I started, and then obviously I had another daughter, and I stopped writing it.
Did you have the concept before, like, you had the family? Like, was it something you had for years, and then having a family drastically almost changed what the story was?
Yes, I'd always had this idea for a sci-fi story and of how somebody would be away and then come back again and not being able to tell anybody. I'm a real big fan of Ian M. Banks and his culture, and that's that hard sci-fi, and I really wanted to do something like that. And I think it's been, you know, in theory 8 years in the making, but this last 3 years since doing comics and then meeting someone like Grant who could...
This is Grant Richards.
Whose
artwork is phenomenal.
Yeah, I met him at the Comics Uncovered convention nearly 2.5 years ago, and he showed
that
me.
Takes place is it Ice?
Ice, yeah. It was just like the day after Ice, and seeing his concept work and the work that he was pitching to a few people, I was like, oh my god, this guy can draw. And then had the conversation. He put a few pages together, and then again, I was totally sort of out of my mind. Just got, this is amazing. And then we pitched it, and we got the deal, and. And it's pretty much taken us where we are. Grant works traditionally, so it takes that little bit longer.
Yeah.
But it's so
hyper detail, though, isn't it?
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, it's some of the panels and some of the things I've used for the promotion of the Kickstarter has been amazing, which is live right now.
Yes, it is. But is it a long Kickstarter?
No, I've gone for, compared to my other Kickstarters, normally I've been a big advocate of promoting it for as long as possible, 3, 4, 5 months before, getting out there, email lists, social media. But this one, because it's almost, well, it's pretty much risk-free, really, because it's going to be published, it's going to be printed, I could go for a no-frills one just as a bit of an experiment, really. So kept the target level low, because even if I could have set a target of £50, £100, and I can still guarantee getting that book out to people. So set it nice and low. We hit the target really early on.
Is it within half an hour?
Yes, braggity brag. Broccoli
Bragg. You weren't going to say it, Broccoli Bragg. I'm not going to let it go.
But the thing is, it was a low target. So I was relatively confident that we'd get there, but not nowhere near as quick as that, of course.
Yeah.
But it's been a really nice campaign so far. The high rewards have gone already because there were some commissions from grants, but there's still some original artwork that's available, which is all A3, and I know it's going to look incredible. I'm going to get a few myself and frame them, but it's going to be really interesting to see where it goes. To see if
I can't wait. I can't wait to see what it turns out like, because like I said, this is a more personal. I want to say a more mature book, even though you're not doing like childish books. Mm-hmm. But do you know what I mean? I think it's a different sort of kettle of fish for you.
Yeah, I think most people see me as that, just that bit of a gobshite and someone who's
rightfully so.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I am. Talk for fun, and you know, not taking it. I've never really taken myself too seriously, and the comic world too seriously. But this is one really from the heart, and to see a couple of reviews come out, which have been really, really positive, has been a really nice thing, to be honest. And to be a little bit more serious about it, and to know that you can do something that you've wanted to do for a long time, is a really nice feeling.
And because it's more of a personal story to you. Yeah. It means even more, doesn't
it? And how professional it looks. It looks genuinely beautiful. But Grant and Darren Stevens, who's done the colours, the palette he's used and what he's done is just been amazing.
You've got Rob Jones on the lettering.
And Rob's done a really good job as well. We've worked really closely together on this one.
Yeah.
Because I did quite a lot of editing on it myself, which you have to do anyway.
Yeah.
But I was really strict with myself, and I'm sure he hates me quite a lot, because I used
he's been doing it in a long time now,
exactly,
though,
and I'd send back and say I don't want that sound effect there, I want it slightly higher in between this, and he's been absolutely brilliant, good as gold.
Well, and when can people expect this to drop?
It's in theory I should be getting the proofs midweek next week,
it's imminent then,
exactly,
really, as soon as the Kickstarter finishes.
It could even be ready before the Kickstarter finishes in theory, but I think it'll be around about that sort of week or the week after. So I'm hoping to officially launch it at Oldham Comic Con on May the 12th.
Amazing.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant.
We had a conversation with Dennis about Oldham Comic Con.
Yeah.
Did you do that last year?
I did, yeah. Yeah, I was looking at
it. I heard that it was a barnstorming success.
Really good venue. Really, really good venue. It's free to get in. There was so much footfall. You know, most people sold quite a few comics.
Yeah.
And he's got a really, really sort of good way about him. He sees he's very comic focused. He's
exactly.
a big comic fan himself, so it makes sense.
It's one we definitely need to speak about more, I think, the Oldham one. I think that's another big one for all those independent comic lovers to put on their radar, isn't it, really?
Definitely. So. He's got some huge names there as well.
He's got a list of 60 guests or something like that.
Yeah,
and
and he looks after the way he looks after the guests is really key. Very similar to this place, very similar to True Believers. They look after the exhibitors. They come round. They look after. Yeah. They give you food, give you drink. It's really.
And it does sort of. It makes a difference, doesn't it? Really, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and they'll also sort you out as well.
There you go. There you go.
I almost said something really bad there.
You could see his face now. You had to bring it down. Do you know what? I really built you up as a legitimate like author. Then.
Sorry, mate.
Now look at you.
Sorry.
And now he's opening a can of Coke. Live on air.
Gin and tonic.
Oh, that's true.
it'll be a really good con. I'm not doing many this year at all, just because of work and family and all the boring stuff that the real life is. But yeah, it'll be a really good one to be at if people can get there.
Yeah. So if you're at Oldham, check out John Lay, and please check out the Kickstarter for Away, because it looks amazing.
Awesome. Cheers, mate. Appreciate
it. Thanks, John.
I'm here with Mr. Stuart Mulrain.
Yeah.
Now, we've just had True Believers, haven't we? I'm still tired from that event. And now we've got a summer event coming up. Did you want to tell us a little bit what it's about?
No, you're right. You're tired. It's basically a smaller version, a bit like this today in a medieval priory.
Nice.
In the summer, so hopefully nice weather. We can use the garden and everything. And more of the same sort of True Believers goodness, small press comics. Again, comic focused.
Who's coming along? Have you got any names yet, or...?
We set it up not really as a guest. We've got you guys come in and the Etherington brothers.
Oh, real.
Yeah. And then, it's largely focused.
They're coming in their private jet, I think.
They are, yeah. I think we like own a share of them now. But they came last year and they were sort of our only guests. We were going to set it up as trying it as a non-guest kind of con and focus more on small press and publishers, which is something we're trying to build with that. And sort of put the feelers out. Last year's one was a bit a last minute idea kind of thing that came together nicely when Melksham
took it. I didn't go last year, but it looked brilliant and a lovely sunny day and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, it wasn't huge footfall. I think we had about 250 people, which doesn't sound like a lot, but they were all focused buyers kind of thing. So Everybody had a good day and made a profit in that, and it was made for a really nice, relaxed day. And, you know, we did the workshops and that as well, which went down really well.
So where can people find out about that? Where's the tickets or venue information?
It's all on our website at oktruebelievers.com. And you can find us on Facebook as well through OK True Believers, or we're generally whoring it around. Or you can subscribe to our mailer on Tiny Letter. Basically, it's a weekly roundup. Damn it, Leamington got to get in on everything. It's basically sort of like a weekly roundup of a bit of True Believers news, a little short blog piece, and then a little roundup of small press stuff. So we put people's Kickstarters on there, stuff from events we go to, that sort of thing. So we did a little bit on Sarah Harris's thing at Swindon. Just sort of doing that, slowly building it up. And we put in a little tips from creators thing, which you've kindly done one for. And
I did a piece on farting recently.
You did do a piece on farting as well. That was, about farting at cons. Think of your fellow table people.
So. And also, I'm a subscriber to your podcast. Did you want to mention that?
Yes, Nerds Who Haunted Themselves. It's basically just a monthly excuse for me and Andy to get together and have a nerdy chat.
Andy, aka I Am Zoot.
Andy, I Am Zoot, he's touring around the convention circuit as well at the minute. So.
Is he in Worcester this weekend?
It was last weekend.
Was it? Okay.
So apparently it was good, but...
It's just two mates talking, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's all it was. It was just an excuse to get together and, you know, pretend we were doing it under the guise of a True Believers thing. And it's good, and it's nice to catch up and that sort of thing. So
nice one. Thanks, Duke.
No worries.
You're a bit close. I felt your skin on my arm then. No!
Touch it. Should we go away from the tables to stay here?
All right, are we?
It's winding down. It's
fun,
almost
laughs.
The baby Jesus.
The baby Jesus. There's been cursing. There's been hugs. It's been an awful lot.
Told me you had a Tommy Tank in here because it was a church.
Why?
I don't know why. I don't know why he chose
the baby
it.
Jesus looking down, thinking, safe hands.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Humanity, Dan, Tony, Vince, taking us on.
Yeah.
We are pillars of the
That's
community.
That's not blasphemous in any way.
No.
So you can't have us.
You can't be blasphemous when you're an atheist.
But it's been a good day. We've come to the end of it. And as we promised, we're knackered.
I'm all right.
No, you're not. You've been complaining about how exhausted you are.
I think my bum aches from... I'm so tired.
Your bum aches?
Every bit of me aches.
That's nothing to do with the condo, is it?
I know, it's true.
It's that high-powered vegetarian diet that you're on.
The power bottom.
Yeah.
Who have you really not liked today? Not allowed to say me.
Who have I really not liked? I don't think there's been anyone. I think everyone's been...
I was a bit disappointed there's no glory hole in the toilets.
Yeah. Well, there'd be all the priests in that, innit? Yeah. You'd think there'd be something going on.
I'll tell you that story off air.
Attila the Nun?
Oh, dear.
But if you did come along to the show today and you said hello, including people like Ben, John and...
Zach.
And thanks Alice. For coming along,
Alice.
Yeah.
That's a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, we had a great chat with loads of people. Yeah. In fact, it's another one of those days where we've just been chatting to people non-stop.
Yeah.
We barely had any time as a threesome.
Yeah. Oh, dear. That's a shame when we don't get that.
And here's our brother from another mother.
Here he is.
Nick Prolix.
Yeah. Say hello, Nick.
Hello.
What a better way to sign off the show, I think. I think it's been another good one.
Pretty good sales.
Yeah. Yeah, we've done all right, haven't we? Yeah. This will be the last time that Awesome Comics 1 is out on the streets without its younger brother.
Yeah. And the next time you'll see us out in the wild is the Comic Mart.
Oh, yes.
At the start of May.
Yeah.
We're going to be at that.
Buying a load of old yellow paper and comics.
And comics. Yeah.
There's quite a new place. We're going to have a Ruby afterwards next door.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Nice. Cheap Ruby. Yeah.
I was talking about curries earlier, the death of curries, so I was just kind of sneering at that.
What?
The younger generation don't like curries.
What are you talking about?
I'm not...
I had one last night that was very disappointing.
Yeah.
Really? I bet you like a mild.
I did have a korma.
Oh, yeah.
Don't shake your head at me, Butcher.
We have fouls. We just take battery acid straight out of the battery.
No, I don't like
curry powder.
I've got a couple of worked with a couple of curry connoisseurs, and I always wind them up by buying the Tesco's tikka masala and say that's the best curry available in the UK mainland. And just the raging arise.
It is quality.
I tell you what, though, it's not bad.
Not bad. Yeah. Not bad curry.
I fancy a curry tonight now. Yeah. Oh, no, but I'll be driving about 300 miles, so probably won't get one.
Yeah.
Just have one in your lap.
Yeah.
Using. Holding the steering wheel with your knees. Yeah.
We got a long journey ahead of us at all going, but it's been well worth it.
Yeah. Dan and Lisa have run a cracking event.
Yeah,
have done. Yeah, they have.
So yeah. Well done to everyone.
We got sandwiches.
Yeah, we did.
You got a wagon wheel.
Someone.
Tea, coffee.
Yeah. Someone looked after our table and sold stuff for us.
She was a nice lady as well. I was sent to her a minute ago.
So, fantastic event. So, thank you very much for listening to this hodgepodge of a show.
Yeah.
As we talk now, we have no idea what this show's going to turn out like.
No, it's just like a load of recording on that thing in your hand.
Yeah. And I've been shoving it in people's faces
talking
all day.
To the mic.
And the mic, etc.
Oh, dear. Yeah. What would the end of an Awesome Comics podcast show be like if it didn't
have a knob joke?
Exactly. So thank you for listening, folks. Now, if you want to find us online, etc.
We're doing that, are we?
Yeah, of course we are. It's an actual outro, Tony.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Where can people find us online, Tony?
What? neverwindanything.blogspot.co.uk or S-O-S-E-Z-O-H-Y-Z.
Yeah. Dan Butcher?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Yeah, we just had a storming day.
Yeah, it has, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you where you can find me as well, backdoorpriests.com.
Oh, nice. Nice. Really the right setting for that joke as well.
Sold by top rated. Yeah. You won't go wrong.
Yeah. Never swipe
top
right.
10 sexy priest sites.
Yeah. Ratemypriest.com. That's rate. You can find me online at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at theredmouseformars.com. And for the last time, I'm so glad this show's ending right now because Tony's just an absolute nightmare to be around in real life. But thank you very much for listening, folks, and tune in next week for another fantastic episode of the Awesome Comics Podcast. As always,
stay awesome.
I'm not doing it.
No.